go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome aboard. The week begins anew. My favorite day of the week as we look out on a brand new, fresh, five-day set of broadcasting. A minute and a half past the hour as we begin this first day of the broadcast week, which should be as close to normal as anything ever gets around here. In other words, five solid days of broadcasting, no interruptions, no travel, no trips, none of that. No, it's my favorite day of the week because it means we start a new week of broadcasting. It's my favorite day of the week because, well, we set aside Mondays for some very, shall we say, special people. That's right. It's Moran Monday on the horn. Crank up the calliope. Get out the popcorn. And get ready for some right-wing morons. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. You will not believe your eyes. You will not believe your ears. You will not believe that such manifest moranity is possible in the 21st century, but it is. Hurry, hurry, hurry. No one admitted after the first 5 minutes. Step behind the curtain and see the right-wing freaks. It is Moran Monday on the horn. Yes, it most assuredly is, and we got a bunch of them. We got all kinds of nominees. We got them mean. We got them stupid. We've got right-wing morons of every stripe and every type. And, well, you know, let's not just sit around here. Let's get busy. Let's see. Let's start with think tank right-wing morons. You know, they're very proud of what a gang of intellectuals they are over to the Cato Institute. You know who Cato was. I assume they named this after Cato. Cato the Younger was the guy who opposed Julius Caesar's attempts to democratize and engage in some populist reforms in ancient Rome. Cato took up arms against Caesar, was part of the civil war that Caesar had to put down. Cato was proud of the fact that he drank only bad wine, you know, that kind of thing. And then there was Cato the Elder. Cato the Elder lived during the time, if I recall correctly, of the Punic Wars. And the only thing Cato the Elder ever did was sit around babbling the phrase, Carthago delenda est. Yes. He was kind of like the way George Bush babbled on and on about we've got to take out Saddam because we don't want the smoking gun to be a mushroom cloud. Actually, it was kind of sleazy rice goes great with kind of sleazy chicken. Who said that? But, you know, just on and on and on. Cato the Elder. Hi, Cato the Elder. How you doing today?
Carthago delenda est.
My, that's a lovely, freshly pressed new toga you're wearing today, Cato the Elder.
Carthago delenda est.
And as my old Latin professor once said, it got to where people just wouldn't invite him to social events anymore because The cocktail party conversation was nothing. Everybody else is lying around on the couches, being fed grapes by the slaves and so forth. And my, these are some lovely. This is some lovely rotten fish sauce. They love that stuff. It was called garum, by the way, G-A-R-U-M. And while everybody, oh yes, it is magnificent rotten fish sauce. What's Cato the Elder saying?
Carthago de Linda Est.
Carthage must be destroyed. Carthage must be destroyed. Carthage must be destroyed. Well, so I presume that the Cato Institute is named after either the old crank Cato or the younger crank Cato. And I'm not sure which, and I'm certainly not willing to go to their hateful little right-wing website and find out. I frankly don't give a damn, because I despise them. But they're intellectuals, you know. If you something of a right-wing intellectual, and by right-wing intellectual I mean that you use more than three-syllable words in order to talk about wanting to destroy things like Medicare and Social Security, then you get to be a feller over to the Cato Institute. I don't know, maybe they named it after Green Hornet's sidekick. Who knows? And so they've got a feller over there, a guy by the name of Michael Cannon, and he is deemed to be health policy expert. Okay, and by that we mean that he uses more than two-syllable words to express his disdain for everybody being able to go to the doctor when they're sick. The Cato Institute, by the way, is broadly well-funded, awash in money from who? Yes, the cooks of the Cook Industries fame. And this health policy expert decided to opine, maybe you've already heard about this, maybe this is old news, decided to opine about the Gulf BP oil disaster. Apparently he had seen a story, because it's been out there, about this sheriff in St. Bernard Parish. I assume it's Bernard. Maybe it's Bernard. Don't know who's running the show down there. The English-speaking people, the American-English-speaking people, or the Cajun-English-speaking people. So St. Bernard or St. Bernard. But anyway, suburban New Orleans is where that is, St. Bernard Parish. And they've got a sheriff down there by the name of Jack A. Stevens. I assume A stands for acid, A-C-I-D, Jack Acid. He says that he's been going hammer and tongs at Immigration and Customs Enforcement to make sure that no illegal ailerons are out there saving wildlife, nor cleaning up birds, nor picking up nary tar balls. Because he wants to protect the community from criminal elements. And, of course, that would, by definition, mean anyone who is darker skinned than he is or speaks with a Spanish accent, Spanish language accent. Right. Pretty sick in its own right. But you know what? There is nothing sick, bigoted, prejudiced, and racist out there that a right-winger cannot make more so. Our first nominee of the evening of this Moran Monday, then, is Michael Cannon, health policy expert for Cato Institute. Quick, Cato, sorry. He reads this story about this bigoted sheriff. And what does he do? He tweets, because he is, after all, a libertarian and therefore a free marketeer, which by definition means that he's all kinds of into cheap labor. he tweets, M.F. Cannon, couldn't I have fun with that? Leaving it alone stands for Michael F. Cannon. M.F. Cannon, M.F. Cannon tweets with regard to undocumented immigrants working on the cleanup, and I quote, oil spills bad, illegal immigrants helping to clean up the oil, worse. And then, because he's a funny guy, this MF-er, I mean MF Cannon, he says, I hear they're very absorbent. Oh, I made a funny. I hear they're very absorbent, these illegal aliens. Yes, yes, there's nothing MF Cannon would like more than to see some undocumented immigrants floating face down in the sludgy, oily, tarry waters of the Gulf of Mexico, using human flesh to sop up the spreading nightmare of conservatism and free market economics that is washing up on the shores of the American Gulf Coast. No, I hear they're very... Oh, that went over so well. That went over so well at the garden party at the yacht club last week. I told a friend, I have several of them, you know, I pay them well. We were talking about these undocumented immigrants, and I said, I hear they're very absorbent. Nah! Jesus. You know, just don't. I hear they're very absorbent. First Moran nominee of Moran Monday, M.F. Cannon of the Cato Institute, displaying some of that compassionate conservatism for which they're so well known. But that's not all. Or as they say on the Ginsu commercials, but wait, there's more. Oh, yes, there's more. There is Oklahoma State Representative Rex Duncan. Rex Duncan of the Oklahoma Boomer Sooner Law Enforcement Society Agency. Rangers. Somehow it doesn't quite have a ring, does it? No. No, Rex Duncan, Representative Rex Duncan, he's all concerned. He's very concerned about the judicial system in Oklahoma. He's very concerned. They're in a state that was founded by land thieving, whose state university couldn't even be bothered to write their own fight song and had to instead steal Yale's? Bula Bula? And called it Boomer Sooner instead? He's concerned about the state of the judiciary. And he's gonna protect Oklahoma from, well, you know. Because you never know when that liberalism is gonna creep into your lifestyle. And then next thing you know, Oklahoma will be overrun, not by floodwaters like it is today from all that global warming that I'm sure Rex Duncan don't believe in, seeing as how he's a friend of Jeebus and a right-wing extremist. No, sir. No, sir. No, sir. No, sir. He's going to protect Oklahoma. Not against unemployment. No, not that neither. It's no better than Oklahoma. Oklahoma is definitely not okay where unemployment is concerned. He's nope. Not going to protect Oklahoma against unemployment. Mm-mm. No, he showed up on MSNBC in an interview with Contessa Brewer. I picked this up over at Crooks and Liars, and I've been hanging on to it for dear life all weekend because, if this isn't Moran Monday material, what in the world is, huh? He's going to protect Oklahoma against, well, let's just let him describe it. Let's do that. This is precious.
The idea of Muslim law taking over in a place like Oklahoma, where the wind comes sweeping down the plain, may seem pretty remote. But still, some state lawmakers there have...
Well, see, that's their state song, and if the Muslims get control, the wind will come sweeping down the wadi. Got to protect Oklahoma and its precious Christian traditions.
Decided it's time to make sure it never happens. They're hoping to get a question on the November ballot that would ask voters to decide if it should be illegal for state courts to consider anything but United States federal and state law when it comes to deciding cases. Republican Rex Duncan is one of the lawmakers backing the vote on the amendment that some call Save Our State. What do you want to save your state from?
Well, we want to save it from an attack on its survival, its future. Contessa, you know, Oklahomans recognize that America was...
I did not know. Honest to Pete, I did not know that the future and the survival of the state of Oklahoma was threatened. I did. Of course, that's because I'm a squishy liberal.
It's founded on Judeo-Christian principles and...
Oh, see, there it is. Oh, let's back up a hair. Yeah. Here we go. Come on back, Contessa. Come on back, Rex. Yeah. Oklahoma was founded on Judeo-Christian principles. You know, that Judeo-Christian principle of stealing land from the Indians that doesn't, it didn't belong to... It's one of those clear, really, really clear Judeo-Christian principles. Not so much. But, no, we'll...
The idea of Muslim law taking over in a place like Oklahoma, where the wind comes sweeping down the plain, may seem pretty remote. But still, some state lawmakers there have decided it's time to make sure it never happens. They're hoping to get a question on the November ballot that would ask voters to decide if it should be illegal for state courts to consider anything but United States federal and state law when it comes to deciding cases. Republican Rex Duncan is one of the lawmakers backing the vote on the amendment that some call Save Our State. What do you want to save your state from?
Well, we want to save it from an attack on its survival, its future. Contessa, you know, Oklahomans recognize that America was founded on Judeo-Christian principles and...
See, you can have a discussion about substantive issues with a person who is interested in having that discussion based on facts. But when you hear this freak say that America was founded on Judeo-Christian principles, you know that he's never read Locke. You know that he's never read Rousseau. You know that he's never read Hobbes. You know that he's never read any... Nothing. Nothing. He's read nothing of the documents upon which this nation was founded. Nothing. Zero. Zilch. Nada. Niente. Nothing. Somebody somewhere along the way handed him a big brown paper bag full of cash and said, Jesus sent this, and by the way, did you know that America was founded on Judeo-Christian principles? And while he was fanning his thumb over the $20 bills, he said, well, bless my soul, it looks like it was. Founded on Judeo-Christian principles. Never mind all of that actual writing that the framers and the founders and so forth did about the pernicious influence of religion or about the fact that this country was not going to be founded on any religious principles. Never mind all that. A Republican, because the right wing has a death grip on media in this country, can simply say, well, America was founded on Judeo-Christian principles. And there's a whole bunch of America, because there's so little of what we do here happening out there. There's a whole bunch of America just sitting on its couch going, yeah, it sure enough was. Because the Constitution for them exists solely in their mind and consists of things that they only imagine to be in the Constitution. So, well, but let's get a little further into the paranoid ravings of Rex Duncan, Oklahoma legislator.
we're unapologetically grateful that God has blessed America and blessed Oklahoma.
Really? Blessed Oklahoma? Rex Duncan, Oklahoma legislator? Blessed? Was that a blessing today? That 2 feet of rain in 10 hours that you got. Boy, God was blessing you hard, wasn't he? You was just so sinful you wasn't ready to accept his blessings. And that's why your streets and your interstates and your railroad tracks and your everything and your cop cars and that was all under 4 or 5 or 6 feet of water. Because that was God richly blessing you. You know, one of these days, they're going to have to look up. You know, every time we say something crazy like this about us being a Judeo-Christian nation, God floods us. Maybe we're getting it wrong. No. They gratefully acknowledge that God has blessed Oklahoma, which they stole, and America. Yes, Rex Duncan, Oklahoma legislator. What's that? Timmy's down a well?
In State Question 755, the Save Our State Amendment is just a simple effort to ensure that our courts are not used to undermine those founding principles and turn Oklahoma into something that our founding fathers and our great-grandparents wouldn't recognize.
And that is what? Because this isn't just about Sharia law. This is any international law. I think they're in the act in haste part of act in haste, repent in leisure. Because, see, some of that international law are these things called treaties. Not that Oklahoma has set up any detention centers for torturing people from Guantanamo or anything like that. No. But there are treaties out there. And they apply to Oklahoma just like they apply to the other 49 states. See, this is part of a theme. This is how themes get legs within the right wing. For years and years and years, John Birchers have had bumper stickers on the backs of their cars and the fronts and sometimes on their windows of their houses and on their foreheads or across the backs of their little mullets or whatever, that say, "Get us out of the UN!" Because they think that somehow or another the United Nations is a threat to the sovereignty of the world, when in fact the United Nations is an attempt to keep things like World War II from ever happening again. But shh, don't tell them. Because they're paranoid maniacs, and this guy is one of them.
Do you believe that there's imminent danger of judges considering Sharia law when deciding cases?
It's not just a danger, it's a reality. Every day...
Now, wait a minute. It's not just a danger, it's a reality? So what he's saying is that today, right now, even as we speak, somewhere out there, there is a judge in Oklahoma considering Sharia law as part of his decision-making process in a case in Oklahoma? Really? Let me just do a little bit of quick typing here. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's find some of that Sharia law. Let's see. Dadgummit, we're a little slow here. Come on, give me it. Come on, Wikipedia, you're not helping here. Oh, okay, here we go. Let's see, Sharia law requires purification. Water is used for purification in most circumstances. So we want to make sure, in other words, that Oklahomans aren't bathing. bathing is to be forbidden in Oklahoma. A judge cannot require bathing. Purification, that element of Sharia law also requires washing dishes. So no more washing dishes. It's all paper plates for Oklahoma from here on out. But for all I know, it's been that way for a while. Praying. Sharia law requires praying. So wait a minute. I thought these idiots wanted prayer in schools. Oh, wrong prayers. Let's see. Oh, no. Well, now I understand. One of the portions of Sharia law is a poor tax. And no, that's not something they would like at the Cato Institute insofar as it sounds like it's a tax on the poor, which the Cato Institute, for instance, would be all for. No. The poor tax, any Muslim living above the subsistence level must pay an annual poor tax known as zakat. It's an obligation owed by the Muslim to the poor of the community. Oh, social justice, yeah, that's got to go. The wealth is calculated based on the wealth of the Muslim paying the tax, not their income. Oh, my God, it's not only, it's a progressive tax that includes a death tax because it's based on overall wealth, not just income. It's 2.5% usually. Ouch. I mean, that's lower than the alleged Christian tithe of 10%. Suddenly, that Islam ain't looking so bad from an I hate taxes standpoint. That's a 7.5% tax decrease for the right wing. Fasting? Well, no. They're not going to do any fasting. Let's see. Okay. Pilgrimage. Everybody got to go to Mecca. That's it. Trade. This ought to be interesting. This is from Wikipedia. Islamic law recognizes private and community property, as well as overlapping forms of entitlement for charitable purposes. Well, that's got to go. Under Sharia law, however, ownership of all property ultimately rests with God. That's definitely not going to run play very well in the libertarian community. No. Because personal property is a fundamental element of our society. Individual property rights are upheld in Sharia law. There's a corresponding obligation to share, particularly with those in need. Well, darn it! If they're in need, that means that they ain't worked hard enough and ain't pulled themselves up by their own bootstrapulations. Under Sharia law, there are to be no unequal exchanges or unfair advantage taken in trade. Well, darn, that would negate Fields' third law about don't smarten up a chump. Oh, wait, okay. Yeah, there's no usury either. You know, exorbitant interest. No, can't do that either. Inequities in risk and reward between parties to a transaction are prohibited. No wonder they hate Sharia law. The rules of inheritance under Sharia law are intricate. And then there's that marriage business. And divorce. And how legal in court. Okay, so at least we've got a working understanding that basically Rex Duncan, Oklahoma legislator, wants to make sure that there is no further bathing going on in the state of Oklahoma.
Liberals and
liberals and liberals, darn it, liberals.
Are you saying has that happened in your state of Oklahoma okay.
It has not. This is a preemptive strike to make sure that liberal judges don't take the bench in an effort to use their position to undermine those founding principles.
It's Oklahoma. What liberal judges? I'm just asking. It's Oklahoma. Don't they kill? I mean, with the exception of poor Bart Cop there behind some walled compound in Tulsa with the arrow slits in the walls and machine gun towers on the corners. defending himself against the right-wing horde. They don't allow liberals to live in Oklahoma, do they? Liberal judges are going to use their position to end it. This is a case of just being bored in Oklahoma, isn't it?
And to consider international law or Sharia law. The other part of the state question is to prohibit all state courts from considering international law or Sharia law when deciding cases, even in cases of first impression.
Now, wait. I don't think anyone could make a credible argument that Mount Sinai is located in Oklahoma. Could you? I can't. As such, and I realize that Rex Duncan, Oklahoma legislator for Jeebus, I realize that he probably thinks that Mount Ararat and Mount Sinai are somewhere in Oklahoma. Just hasn't found it yet. But, and I'm just asking here, wouldn't the Ten Commandments be considered international law? After all, we were founded on Judeo-Christian principles. You done heard him say that, right? But those Judeo-Christian principles came from where, Rex Duncan? Oklahoma legislator for truth and liberty and where? Desert? Middle East? Arabian Peninsula? That's kind of international, isn't it?
This will be an opportunity.
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Duncan, but less than 1% of your state's population is Muslim, so where would that threat come from?
It's a growing threat, frankly, and this, again, is a preemptive strike.
No, she didn't ask you whether it was growing or shrinking, Rex Duncan, preemptive Republican legislator. She asked you where the threat was coming from. The answer is the dude who works at the 7-Eleven. Or, quite possibly, the dude who fixed my wife's bladder last year at the medical center. That's where the threat's coming from. It's a growing threat, and this is a preemptive threat. This guy's straight out of Dr. Strangelove. I cannot allow my precious bodily fluid, my purity of essence, to be corrupted by Sharia law. Pour me a grain alcohol and rainwater, Mandrake, and whatever it is you British people drink.
They understand that this is a war for the survival of America. It's a cultural war. It's a social war. It's a war for...
So we've had him use the words preemptive strike twice, and now he's into full-on war. That's okay. We've got another moron with a war reference later, too. They cannot go 5 minutes without jumping into the eliminationist rhetoric. Of course, if you want to learn full on about eliminationism, I have to mention my buddy Dave Nyward's book, The Eliminationists, published a year or so ago. It's chapter and verse on the people like Rex Duncan, Oklahoma legislator eliminationist. It's a war, you see. It's a war.
For the survival of our country. In other states, while they've looked away too long, looked the other way, and kowtowed to political correctness, have lost an opportunity, perhaps to save their state.
I believe lost an opportunity to make sure their states don't bathe no more. Praise Jeebus.
Oklahoma voters at a margin greater than 90% will approve this state amendment, and when we do, other red states and maybe even some lesser blue states will...
The lesser blue states. Like, the lesser Antilles? And what? All the other reds, they're in a race. You remember how once upon a time, I used to, and still do from time to time, remind you of the fact that the reason... Right-wing talk radio is so absolutely crazier than a sprayed roach is because they're constantly having to one-up each other on crazy. Well, now it's gotten to the point where state legislatures, and I've got further proof of this too, state legislatures are having to one-up themselves on to crazy. And this is that, and he just admitted it.
Whether
are you worried,
states that we're saving too.
Are you worried about other kinds of religious fundamentalism creeping into the decisions judges make when it really should be based on secular
law? Other kinds? What other kinds, Contessa?
Secular law?
Secular law! Take that woman out to the dunking tank and get her good and sopping wet till she keeps stops talking that secularism. Secular humanist eat Bibles!
It ought to be based on federal law and state law, and any effort by any source to do anything else, frankly, it's the face of the enemy. It's the face of the enemy.
So now we've got preemptive strike, war, culture war, and enemy.
And we need to call it what it is. Oklahomans are going to do that. And
what? Dumber than a box of rocks?
Going to show other states what it looks like to take a leadership role in saving their own future and the sanctity of their state court system.
Republican Rex Duncan, I appreciate the time that you've given us today. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Now, see, Contessa Brewer did as good a job as she probably was capable of doing under the circumstances. But that interview, see, this is all part of the false equivalency. Where you treat people who ought to be on screen in clown suits like they're sane. Rex Duncan, 'twas brillig in the slithy toad did gyre and gibble in the wave. Good night, sir. Snicker snack. Rex Duncan, you are crazier than a sprayed roach, and I thank you for joining us tonight. He's nuts. And so are, according to him, 90% of the electorate in his state. But that's our second nominee. Like I said, we have multiple nominees this evening. We are rich. We are rich with morons tonight. Not kidding, really. We are awash in morons. I wonder if we should retire Steve King the same way we retired Sarah Palin, because I've got some crazy from him. Or Pat Robertson. I could save him for prayer meeting, but frankly, I don't know. This one kind of sounds like he's espousing some Sharia law, maybe. But no, that's not all. Not all at all. No. We have Rick Barker, Barber, Rick Barber, from the I can't use cavalcade of crazy because that phrase is taken. That's Reverbo's column. But from the depthless or endless or bottomless pit of insane political advertising coming from the Republican Party in the state of Alabama, we have Rick Barber. Rick Barber is a teabagger. Rick Barber is a teabagger. And he's got the ad to prove it. Now, it goes without saying that Rick Barber is a white guy. The Alabama 2nd Congressional District comprises Otaga, Barber, Bullock, Butler, Coffey, Conecuh, Covington, Crenshaw, Dale, Elmore, Geneva, Henry, Houston, Houston, I don't remember anymore, Lowndes, Montgomery, part of it, and Pike Counties, which is basically the lower southeastern corner of the state. Apparently, it's got lots of crazy in it. Rick Barber wants to be their congressman. Real bad. The thanks go out, by the way, to chat room moderator Lottie for this story. He's a teabagger, and he released a brand new TV ad yesterday. And he's showing off his Merkin history knowledge by having a dialogue with the Founding Fathers. Mm-hmm.
And I would impeach him. And if that's not enough, some of you men own taverns. Sam, you are a brewer. Mr. President, a
Now, here's a guy in modern dress, in a striped shirt. You've already heard the snare drums beating. It opens with fingers drumming next to an old flintlock pistol. You know, apparently you can't be a right-winger and run for office in Alabama without some firearm imagery.
Stiller, you know how tough it is to run a small business without a tyrannical government on your back. Today, we have an Internal Revenue Service that enforces what they call a progressive income tax. You'll love this. Every year, if not every quarter, we're basically required to spy on ourselves, report what we earn, who we hire and fire, with an all-powerful separate court system. Without representation, they can increase taxes, add costly regulation, or perform malicious audits. Now, this same IRS is going to force...
More camera shots of, like, a quarter of a guy's tri-cornered hat and a little bit of a powdered wig sticking out, and somebody's really pissed off drumming their fingers. And I think it makes it look like they want to pick up that flintlock pistol and just blow Rick Barber away, but who am I? And it's all apparently taking place in a closed down bar.
Forces to buy health insurance, cram it down our throats, or else. Now I took an oath to defend that with my life. Now, I can't stand by while these evils are perpetrated. You gentlemen revolted over a tea tax. A tea tax. Now look at us. Are you with me?
Gather your armies.
That was George Washington. I told you there'd be more eliminationism and war references tonight, didn't I? I don't lie. Gather your armies. Yep. Rick Barber doesn't want to go to the Congress so much as he wants to march on Washington with firearms, apparently. Gather your armies. Some of you men own taverns. Sam, you were a brewer, because apparently somewhere along the way, Rick Barber, Alabama 2nd District Patriot, has noticed a bottle of Sam Adams beer somewhere in a convenience store, and it says, Brewer, Patriot! No, he didn't own a bar. He brewed beer. There's a difference. There's a difference between the Samuel Adams Brewery and Cheers. One's a bar, one's a brewery. This is apparently entirely too complicated for Rick Barber, Alabama Patriot. But that's here in 2010, that's not all there is, because he's also he got 28% of the vote and got into the runoff against Martha Roby, whom the Repiglicans would actually prefer, because I guess she's a little less nuts. So, as a teabagger, Rick Barber's out there making videos. No kidding.
I'm Rick Barber, and I approve this message.
On September 11, 2001, America was attacked.
9-11!
We weren't attacked by a nation. We weren't attacked by terror. We were attacked by Islamic jihadists.
Wearing helium-filled balloon pants. What? Sorry, Reverbo. Couldn't resist.
In the name of Islam, nearly 3,000 Americans have been murdered in Washington, D.C., Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and New York City.
No, dumbass. None of that was done in the name of Islam. Or Islam, if you would care to correctly pronounce it, you cracker dumbass. No, it was done in the name of people who were pissed off at the United States over stuff the United States has done, and they decided to get all biblical on our ass and do unto us as we had been doing unto them. But never mind. Because Rick Barber, Alabama patriot, well, he's going to straighten us out.
Jihad threatens our freedom, our families, and our way of life. Under the name of Islam, American soldiers and civilians have been tortured and murdered. Islamic
probably under that Sharia law they're working on out in Oklahoma. I wonder if Rick Barber knows about that.
Jihad poses a clear and present danger to American freedom and to the very existence of the state of Israel. Yet the Obama administration wants to call 9/11 a man-caused disaster. Now Muslims want to build a mosque just two...
Yeah, because, you know, no way was 9/11 a man-caused disaster. I mean, those were Martians flying those planes, or maybe they were remote-controlled, or maybe they weren't planes at all. Yeah, it really depends on which crackpot theory you buy into. Wasn't a plane. Nope, you're lying at mass hallucination. It wasn't man-caused. It was magic. That's what it was. Demonism. Yeah, that's because Islam is a demon, right? And they're because, well, you know.
Blocks from where the World Trade Center once stood. When's the grand opening of this ground zero?
Hold on.
Now Muslims want to build a mosque just two blocks from where the World Trade Center once stood. When's the grand opening of this ground zero mosque? September 11th, 2011. This is unacceptable. There is a difference between tolerance and surrender. The word Islam...
There's a difference between idiocy and mental retardation, too, buddy. And you apparently fall under idiocy.
Literally means surrender. And if we don't start electing leaders that are able to recognize...
No, it doesn't mean surrender, dumbass. It means submission to the will of God. You know, I don't ascribe to the religion, but I can at least tell you a little bit about it. I don't have to make stuff up. It means surrender. Really? That's what you do? You put the white flag on the stick and you wave it and you yell, Islam! Islam! Thank God this guy's not going to win.
The enemy. Call them by name and stand up against them. Then surrendering is exactly what we are doing. My name is Rick Barber. Send me to Congress on June 1st. I won't mince words when it comes to our national defense.
And you won't even get many of them right either, apparently. Now let's go back up to his previous lunatic commercial. And that because he's got a little premise in there that's kind of important. Let's go back.
And I would impeach him. And if that's not enough, some of you men own taverns. Sam, you are a brewer. Mr. President.
And I would impeach him, and if that's not enough, some of you men own taverns. I just want to know what the foretext is on that. Who's he going to impeach? Come on. Come on. Who are you going to impeach, Rick? Who do you want to impeach, Rick Barber, Alabama teabagging patriot? You? Some of you men own taverns. Okay. Well, okay. Let's work with that.
A distiller. You know how tough it is to run a small business without a tyrannical government on your back. Today.
Is that a tranquil government or a tyrannical government? I can't tell because Cracker can't speak English here.
We have an internal revenue service that enforces what they call a progressive income tax. You'll love this. Every year, if not every quarter, we're basically required to spy on ourselves, report what we earn, who we hire and fire, with an all-powerful separate court system. Without representation, they can increase taxes, add costly regulation, or perform malicious audits. Now, this same IRS is going to force us to buy health insurance. Cram it down our throat.
Really? The IRS is? No kidding.
Throats or else. Now, I took an oath to defend that with my life. Now, I can't stand by while these evils are perpetrated. You gentlemen revolted over a tea tax. A tea tax! Now look at us.
Yeah. Rick Barber, let's do look at you. Because the guy there that's supposed to be George Washington, man, how bad off was he needing work that he took this acting job? Do I actually get to drink the liquor? No, that's tea. Oh, this is a tea bagging commercial. Shoot. But no, 1791, brand new country. One of the first things gets done is a tax on, wait a minute, liquor! In fact, that was during the George Washington administration. And it created no small amount of unrest, such that the Federal Army had to be called out to enforce the tax. Whiskey Rebellion? Anybody? Come on. You know, I can see the hands. Whiskey Rebellion? We learned about it in maybe 11th grade American history. Rick Barber apparently was somewhere else. Stunning. Stunning levels of ignorance. The whiskey tax, 1791. Not making this up. Because it was one of the... Come on, we're Americans. It was one of the first things we were actually making that could generate some revenue for a young government that was really hoping to survive till day after tomorrow, never mind next year. Oh, like I said, we got lots of morons tonight. We got tons of morons tonight. We got more morons than what we know to do with. But that's a start, I'd say. Wouldn't you? That's a start. That's enough to get us going for a while. And we're not done. There's some really serious stuff out there, too. Another show of hands. Anybody think we're ever leaving Afghanistan? I have proof tonight that we are not. Just forget it. We ain't leaving Afghanistan. If Afghanistan thought it was screwed before, now it's really screwed. And this is even without Rex Duncan and Rick Barber in the government. Really, well, and truly screwed. So we'll take a little break, and we will come back with your calls. You know, you know how to reach the program, right? 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, it's 304-658-3333. Email rolls into bobkincaid@gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. Emphasis on listener-supported. This is The Horn.
Streamline. And I said, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. I'm going to take a plane. Come with me tonight. Gonna put on my hot pants. Promenade down fucking Broadway till the cows come home. La la la.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
This is a public service announcement.
There's a new type of music program coming to the Horn.
Warning me about Osama or whatever. Picture me buying the scam. I said never. But I don't heed the battle call.
Music for liberals. Music for activists. Music with a social conscience.
Easy down K Street.
The People's Mixtape.
Johnny's dead and Mitch's gone and Kelly have to live. Is that on the list? And then goes on and on.
Coming soon to the Head On Radio Network.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, indeed, and we are a solid hour into Moran Monday on the Horn. Your nominations, of course, are always more than welcome, so bring them to the table. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, Head On. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. This is Conversation Radio. So, be ready for some conversing. Okay? Okay, good, good, good. And, well, this is Conversation Radio, and that is why we are going to go immediately to the phones and see what's cooking this evening. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up, Garrett?
Yes, you are correct. There is a bumper crop of Moran today. I mean, the barber thing alone is just... I think it was on Hartman, somebody asked, is he related to Haley? Seriously.
You know, I never thought about that, but they both certainly seem to possess that Moran gene.
Yeah, that's what, because I haven't seen the spelling of it yet. I just heard it on, you know, Hartman and the like today. But, I mean, that is some serious, hardcore Moran there. That is, like, pretty close to 180 proof there.
Very much, very much. I mean, this is rocket fuel.
Oh, boy. But we do have an anti-Moran today.
Really? Really? Not on their side.
Well, here's the thing. You are familiar, of course, with Little Orphan Annie, the wonderful bit of, you know, right-wing propaganda that it has always been, correct?
Okay, yeah. The comic strip, Hollow Eyes, yeah. Empty Sockets, yeah.
Yeah. First, they've killed it. They've canceled the strip.
I didn't even know it was still going.
Apparently, after the play, which is ironic because, as many of the listening audience will remember, the play actually had a song against Hoover in the play the first time around, which got quickly, you know, hidden away, as Hartman likes to harp on a little bit. You know, but, yeah, it got revived in, like, the 80s, and it's dead now. And the thing is that it's they even interviewed the current artist or whatever. It's like, well, this comic was the original version of Fox News.
I never thought of it in that regard, but yeah, you're probably right.
And but this is
Daddy Warbucks, you know, please.
Yeah, well.
So
yeah,
it's gone to it has gone to its long home. It's much deserved reward then, right?
Well, its much deserved reward would be to be completely forgotten.
I don't know that there's a whole lot of people out there remembering it. I mean, was it running in newspapers and stuff still?
Apparently so. Not very many. Certainly not in this town. But yeah, apparently it was running. I stumbled upon it, you know, last night, and I was like, wow. You know, they even pointed out how Warbucks suddenly got ill because of the climate and died after FDR got elected for the fourth term and suddenly appeared after, almost immediately after FDR bit the big one, yeah. Bragging about, he was puffing on a cigar and bragging about, you know, the climate's much better now.
Ooh, yuck.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, they're kind of like celebrating it, but it's like, you know, it brought a smile to my face to think that, yes, you're celebrating it, but dude, it's dead.
Good deal. It's nice. Well, Lord knows we are swamped with enough of it. It's nice to see one little bit of it go.
Yeah, and I don't know if you saw, but apparently in the college sports merge-a-palooza, Texas ain't leaving the Big 12.
Well, that's what they say now.
No, this is the hot news, that they're going to...
The last I saw of it, Garrett, it said conflicting reports.
Oh, I didn't... But yeah, that was the top story on SportsCenter, just as your show was starting up for the day, that, you know, that they're back in and that it's the real deal.
Okay, so who's gone?
Well, because Texas was supposed to go with...
Texas Tech and Colorado and Oklahoma and...
Oklahoma State.
Oklahoma State, okay.
And Nebraska's supposed to be... bolting for...
Well, Nebraska is leaving for the Big 12.
For the new Big 12.
Yeah, that's going to get confusing, isn't it?
Well, the thing is that I've heard that Missouri is a sure thing to go. Because, you know, Missouri's Nebraska's biggest rival. Then they're going to get to the even 14, make the hard sell on Notre Dame.
So what happens to that classic Nebraska-OU rivalry? Does that just fizzle?
I think it looks like it's about to fizzle. Because you know these mega conferences are going to restrict, because that's how they're
going to... You know what's going to be fun? The non-revenue sports, that's what's going to be fun.
Oh, God.
For Texas Tech, Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, and Colorado. You know, it's one thing to take your football team or your basketball team there, because those are revenue sports and they generate some cash of their own. But when you start having to take, let's say, your women's softball team to, I don't know, Pullman, Washington.
Yeah.
That's when it's going to start getting fun.
Or more accurately, since we're talking about Texas, their men's baseball team, which is one of the more prominent programs in the country still.
I mean, and
you know,
it's going to get a little pricey, isn't it?
You think? I mean, because before this word that Texas was going to stay, I had heard the idea posited that it wouldn't be stupid for the Mountain West and the Big 12 to merge, because the Big 12 still has that automatic bid into the BCS, and guess who's the newest member of the Mountain West Conference?
Well, I'm hearing here that without a doubt, that what's going on is what used to be the Big 12 and is now the Big 10, like I said, it's going to get so confusing, is trying to salvage a TV deal, and that Missouri is not going to go up and play ball with Nebraska and Northwestern and Illinois and Iowa and the rest, that crowd.
Yeah, I think that's a mistake for Missouri. Missouri's biggest rival is in my mind, is seriously Nebraska.
Yeah, but no. Their hardcore rivalry is Kansas.
Yeah, but that might be it. But that's more of a basketball. If we're talking football, they're screwing themselves out of their top football rival.
Well, it would make sense for him to go, but by the same token, I don't know. Missouri's a tough cut. Missouri took a screwing just to be in the Big 12. That's part of the reason Tom Osborne and Nebraska left. They were taking it on the chin financially to be in the Big 12 with Texas. Texas's payday on any given game was higher than Nebraska's.
Well, Texas has their own regional TV network.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, it had always been in the back of my head in this, and then they mentioned it on ESPN's ticker as they were in, detailing the deals. Like, oh, yeah, that's right. They have, like, a Longhorn network or some doofy thing because you occasionally see it, the logos when they're showing the highlights since they're watermarked all over the place.
Well, the biggest problem facing Missouri is the fact that they don't have any invitations.
Yeah. I mean, because that's the thing. I mean, but then again, there's talk that the thing is that Missouri could possibly be garbage because there's talk that the Big Ten wants Rutgers because they want that New York.
They want the New York market, yeah.
Which would make sense because if they grabbed them and Notre Dame, the Big Ten's regional sports network.
And remember, who owns the Big Ten network?
Isn't it Michigan or somebody?
No. The Big Ten football network. That would be Rupert.
Oh, good God! It's Fox Sports, one of their affiliates.
No, Rupert.
Networks.
Rupert owns the Big Ten network. It's called the Big Ten network.
Yeah, but
you can only get it if you pay Rupert extra.
Oh, yeah. So that's cute. I wasn't fully aware of that. That it was it was one of Rupert's networks. I mean,
yeah, that's a little off-putting, isn't it?
Well, the thing is that that family of Fox Sports networks for the pro leagues. I mean, they're everywhere. And, I mean, it's like...
Yeah, the one we get is Fox Sports Pittsburgh, so I get a steady diet of Pittsburgh Pirates baseball. Oof,
yeah,
that's tough. That is tough.
Because here we get, since we're close to L.A., we get the two Fox Sports for Los Angeles, which means, all pretty much a steady diet of all of those sports teams. Plus...
Watching the Dodgers is not as fruitless an enterprise by any stretch of the imagination as watching the Bucks.
Yeah, of course not, because, I mean, even if the Dodgers stink, here's the thing. As long as they're west of Colorado, guess you get to listen to play, to call the play-by-play.
No, Vin?
Yes.
Yeah, that's worth the price of admission all by itself.
Yes, precisely. I'll admit that, if I have nothing better to do, and there's a Dodger game on, and I know that it's...
Well, the frustration with watching the Bucks, it lies in the fact that watching Pittsburgh play baseball is on a par with watching Legion ball, really. I mean, it just is, yeah.
Because their owner is only interested in profits.
Well, it's just Pittsburgh baseball is just sad. Such a heritage and such a tradition, but I got to be careful though, Garrett, because I'm gonna lose the audience in a minute. We're talking about sports again.
I was gonna go into how both sides in this whole that now that the World Cup, I was gonna go into both how both the pro soccer side and really with the anti soccer crowd are getting kind of crazy.
You know what? I have to admit it. I have watched a serious amount of World Cup this weekend, I enjoyed it.
Well, I'll tell you my story with it. I watched it in '94. I mean, even though the press, that I read was, you know, kind of voicing all the, well, you fine Americans can't handle something like this. Like, I enjoyed the hell out of it. Till they got to the final game, and it was decided on penalty kicks.
Yeah, that's disturbing. And I've got so much more to learn about the rules of the game because, I've never heard tell of coming to the end of a match, and regardless of the score, the referee just adds an arbitrary amount of time based on what he thinks has been wasted somewhere along the way. Wow.
Yeah, which is no problem. But I mean, when you get to the elimination rounds, and it will ultimately come down to penalty kicks, that's what appalled me, because it is I will say it a million times, it is a good game and it is good sporting events, but to have the world championship decided in that fashion is...
Yeah, play another 5 minutes. Play till they drop, because somebody's going to get exhausted and screw up.
Well, that's how hockey
is. But you know what? I watched the England-U.S. match, and with all due respect for the folks who know a lot more about the sport than I, when the dude for England hook slid into our keeper, you know, that slide looked like it was a little bit late coming. That looked just a little dirty. That was a little bit Ty Cobb high cleats for my taste.
Yeah, not exactly shocking, but yeah. But he's going to end up playing.
By the way, my heart just bled for the poor Aussies. Germany just dismantled them.
Four to nothing, that's brutal.
I mean, they had the Germans had everything but panzer brigades out there, or at least it looked like they did. Just mowing down the Socceroos. It was sad.
Because, I mean, granted, the Germans are one of the dominant, you know, countries in the world for soccer, but that was just, I mean, when it gets to be 2-0 is a pretty, for soccer, it's pretty hefty business there. But when you get to 4-0, that's just like, ooh.
But you know what? I posted this on, I think, Twitter or something after the USA-England match. As far as England's goalkeeper is concerned, for me, it was like somewhere in this country tonight, Bill Buckner is sleeping a little better.
Yeah.
Because it was the same kind of thing. If that had been for the loss, I don't think Mr. Green could have gone back home.
Well, remember that it goes back to 94, the Colombian goalie for Colombia. He made a sim. I think it was, I want to say, was also an own goal, was responsible for an own goal.
Oh, the Danes did one of those. The Danes did one of those yesterday, and just. Ugh.
Yeah, but anyway, in the 94 tourney, the Colombian goalie surrendered an own goal. I think I don't want to say it was against the U.S., but anyway, he surrendered an own goal, and he met a grisly end not very long after the World Cup was done with.
Ew, I don't even want to think about it. Hey, Garrett, I got a roll, but yeah. Good conversation. Take care.
Yeah.
Bye now.
Take care, Bob.
And, you know, we think we take sports seriously. Ugh, the rest of the world, please. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Jim, what's up?
Not a whole lot. How are you?
Pretty good.
I think it was on Sunday. I caught Bill Maher and the last show for the season.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. And he had a very interesting panel of guests on there. The first of whom was Queen Noor, and she was talking about the countdown to zero thing and the proliferation of nuclear weapons in the near, far, and Middle Eastern countries. And I didn't realize how important of an activist she is against nuclear proliferation in these Islamic countries and other countries in the world, and how there has really been a resurgence of nuclear proliferation. You know, a lot of people think that all that went away from the Soviet Union.
No. Did she have much to say about Iran, Jim?
No, not a great deal, other than the fact that well, how can you really have a whole lot to say about Iran, you know?
Well, and that's what I was thinking, that that would be more than a little bit
but
uncomfortable.
That you know, Iran was trying to find its place, that everybody else is doing this. And she did say that Iran was receiving and making deals to receive weapons that once were under the control of the Soviet Strategic Rocket Forces. You know, that's the whole thing when the Soviet Union collapsed. The span of control over all of that sort of disintegrated. And the fact that there were a lot of unemployed nuclear specialists who were willing to sell their skills as well as other materials to the highest bidder. And the second guest was Rachel Maddow. And you're going to love this. The third person on the panel was Bill Fritz.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
They let him out?
Oh, yeah. And he was on there, and he looked about as nervous as the proverbial whore in church. And Mara's party words to him were, "I'll trade my fortune for yours any day, fella." He just absolutely let him have it. And, of course, Fritz was up there trying to defend certain positions which were absolutely indefensible. And the other person on there was Oliver Stone.
Oh, Oliver's always interesting.
And so, basically, it was an extremely interesting program. And Marr has such a sharp wit and a very incisive mind. And he was also talking about the situation in the Gulf and the economic influence of oil wells there. And he made the point, and I thought about this, you know, there are 58,000 jobs that are that belong to the oil industry platforms there in the Gulf. And he made the point that, you know, basically, if these jobs have to go, they have to go. I mean, jobs come and go, but species of wildlife...
But extinction is forever?
Is forever, exactly. And he made the point, I don't know what's going on over here. Something's happening to the power. Do I have you?
Yeah, I'm here.
But obviously, I think we have some atmospherics or electrical disturbances. But, you know, he said these 58,000 workers could be employed in, you know, green-type energy industry. And at the cost of around $5.8 billion. And he said that much is found in the sofa of the Pentagon every year.
Yeah, and that's the thing. If we get serious about a transition to green energy and sustainable energy production, we'll hardly miss a step. And it is not a crippling amount of money, but because you know, so much of this stuff, maybe it's because of what I'm involved in, Jim, but so much of this stuff has a hard time gaining any traction with the American people. Because you've got idiots on the right wing out there screaming, "Oh, this here's a carbon tax, and it's gonna," it goes back to something I said at the beginning of the program. You can have a discussion with someone about what is good and not good for this country, and you can maybe come to some sort of consensus or compromise. But you can never do that if one side is lying and making stuff up as they go.
Well, that's exactly what you were talking about earlier when you had this idiot on there during the opening moments of your program, and you certainly got well out of the gate with starting with him. But, I mean, these people, their ranks are growing every day. And what they're doing is they are rewriting and misinterpreting history and using it to their own advantage. And they are promoting doctrines that have just a modicum of truth in them. Some of them not even a modicum of truth. And you have them repeating the same message, the same message, and the same message with almost like a metronome. And more people are beginning to believe some of this stuff. That's what's so frightening about it.
Right.
Of course, it isn't surprising to me because I have seen this happen in history. It happened in Germany during the 1930s. And they're using the same playbook of the Nazi propaganda ministry, except in a different format, of course, but basically the same rules. They're telling a lot of lies, big lies, and people are really, I think, beginning to believe this stuff. And it's really...
Well, I mean, honest to God, look, there's stuff going on in this country, and I realize that there's a certain danger, Jim, in trying to extrapolate long-term trends out of short-term events, but more and more of this stuff is happening. Look at the floods. Look at the flooding of the Cumberland River a couple of months back, in around the Nashville area. That was something that was almost outside human memory.
Right.
And then just a couple of days ago, it happens in Arkansas. Today, it happens in Oklahoma City. It happened in Texas last week. It's June, Jim. It is June.
I know.
The seasons are shifting.
Exactly.
And the seasons are shifting as a direct and proximate result of the changes we have wrought in the workings of the planetary closed loop.
Well,
And people see it, and I don't know what they do, Jim. They just look at it, well, God's will. CNN today ran on several occasions this segment with a woman with a profound Southern accent, you know, that Arkansas Hill Country accent, who's just saying, well, there's 20 people got killed, but they left me in mind, so I reckon God has a greater purpose for us in this world. And I'm sitting there thinking, my God, how could you put something like that on the air? That woman was actually sitting there saying, God left us on earth and took 7 babies instead because he's got something bigger for us to do.
I would hope CNN's purpose in putting that on the air was to reveal her rote stupidity and lack of compassion for...
But there was nothing there to indicate that. It was just proffered as, you know, fact reporting. And
I don't know how much leeway they have as far as, for example, just telling the woman what you just said. I don't know, because you have more experience with CNN than I ever will have. But nonetheless, maybe that's the reason they did that. I don't know. But when you compare CNN to Fox News, good God, I mean, this is much different.
Oh, without a doubt. But what I'm getting at, though, is that, you know, CNN is supposed to be something approaching normal, which it isn't. And they're running this stuff. You know, I sit and I scan the news channels and so forth during the course of the day. I'll just check in, see if anything's breaking, that kind of thing. And it's been flooding. They must have spent something on the order of 2 or 3 solid hours of broadcast time literally watching a girl in a tree in some portion of flooded Oklahoma City while rescuers tried to get her. Honest to God, I think they were waiting for her to drown and kind of halfway hoping she would.
Really?
Yeah.
Well?
Because it was almost audible. Well, they've rescued her.
Well, I guess that's the kind of thing that sells news and keeps viewers' attention riveted to their channels. I don't know. I mean, there are all types of inputs that go into what they cover and what they don't. But anything with Fox News. But like I say, these people like you had on there the earlier are they're part of a very dangerous and malignant idiocracy. And they have, in my opinion, they have a plan to which they all are subscribing. It's just not isolated pockets of them. And they have begun to coalesce over the past couple of years to the point that, you know, it's very frightening to me. And all it will take is a severe economic downturn in this country to bring into the fold a lot more people. You know, just for example, that's what brought Hitler into power in 1933. I mean, during the years of the Weimar Republic, things went along, and they did as best they could. And then when the Great Depression hit, and it hit worldwide, and Germany was destroyed by it, that was grist for Hitler's mill, and that's exactly what helped the Nazis come into power.
Sure it is.
And I'm applying the same axiom that applied there to what is happening here. And I used to say what could happen here, but I'm afraid I have to transition from the conditional tense to the present tense. It is here. And to me, it's extremely frightening. And people simply just, I think they feel so overwhelmed to the point, the ones who realize what's happening, that they are just being, you know, outnumbered, outmasked, and as you have pointed out many times, outspent. And there's a lot of big money behind these idiots and these people who are gaining public attention because they have all the big bucks behind them.
It is, and it's apparently, Jim, incredibly contagious.
Of course it is. I mean, you know, anything like that. I mean, stupidity is one of the worst diseases in the world. It is so highly infectious. And lucidity, unfortunately, does not have the same ability to spread. Lucidity of mind and clarity of thought. And I don't see that in any of these people like Sarah Palin or this idiot that you were talking about in Oklahoma. And I just don't understand how any thinking person could hear this stuff without saying, what the hell is he talking about? Or what is he on? Or did he not get his, is he not taking his medication properly? But yet they come across with this veneer of clarity of mind that allows people to accept what they say with a lot, you know, not even with the slightest amount of alacrity.
I know. And as a normal, rational person, it does. You find yourself just sitting there shaking your head, going, how's this happening? How's this happening?
It just makes me want to just, you know, put my head under the pillow. I mean, honestly and truly, and just I'm just amazed by what I hear, and each day it becomes more and more amazing. And with the advent of some of these natural catastrophes that are happening, like these floods and things like that, they're saying. Well,
and yet, when you see things like this, what do you get? They revert to their favorite pastime, and that is interpretation of millennial, premillennial, or postmillennial eschatology. And they haul out that tired old verse about, and yea, verily, there shall be wars and rumors of wars and great quakings of the earth. And so the next thing you know, flooding in Oklahoma City means Jesus is putting his running shoes on.
Or mankind is being punished for this, that, and the other. I don't know. I simply don't understand a lot of the stuff that's happening as far, well, I understand what is happening. It's because of our abuse of the world in which we're living. But these people don't have sense enough to realize that you can only abuse the world as it is so long before you're going to have a lot of bad things to start happening with the weather and the climate and the ocean currents, as you pointed out earlier. And instead of just looking at it from the standpoint, well, you know, you can't just continue to pour poison and poison and poison, but yet they've got to put some type of other spin on it. And they're doing it very successfully.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. They're quite competent at this filthy lying business.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, it's to like, you know, Dr. Goebbels would be very proud of these people. Very proud. Well, listen, I know you've got other callers that you need to take, and I appreciate your time tonight, and hope you have a good show.
Thank you, Jim. You have a good evening as well. Take care.
Take care.
Bye now. And we move onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey. So, nice little article about that Meg Whitman pushing people. Did you see that?
No,
that dumb bitch, she shoved someone when she was CEO of eBay, and it was settled, you know, for around $200,000. You know, people say she's a demanding boss, but I guess she knocked somebody over because they weren't doing her bidding. I mean, I can't wait for that style of leadership to hit Sacramento.
Yeah, you're going to be loving it.
Oh, no, it's a horror show. You know, and she's horrible. You know, I look at these people, and they all just make me feel real ill. I'm not too sure what Jerry Brown is planning, you know.
I gotta ask you, Sandra. Is that the best that the Democrats had in California? Is it from now till November I hear Governor Moonbeam?
No, it's just sort of bizarro world. It's like, wait a minute, we got to get these sort of...
And that's not to say that I don't have any respect for Jerry Brown.
I don't know, but it's the musical chairs of executive offices in California. I mean, if you look at the different offices, these freaks, they get termed out, and they're here, there, everywhere. And we just can't get rid of Brown. That fool thinks held every office in the state, every one of them, all of them. Anyway.
How is he going to campaign against Meg Whitman? Is there any hope? I mean, is this just a foregone conclusion?
Oh, can you hold on for one?
Yeah, I think I hear a niece in the background there.
Listen, is her mother coming?
Uh-huh.
Okay, I'll be over there in a minute. All right. Yeah, go on. Bye.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Just,
No. I that's my world.
Oh no, it's just hot out. It's like 90 degrees, and you know the pool. And I just was lining up to make sure there's some sort of adult in the mix.
Yeah, you know that's always a bonus. Yeah.
And there is. So anyway, what was you asking about?
Well, no. I mean, is there any hope that Jerry Brown might beat Meg Whitman, or is it?
Well, no, there is. Because Meg Whitman is really not very appealing. I mean, she got a lot of money, so you hear about her all the time. But she can spread her really unappealingness around with all that money. So it cuts both ways. She can spend a lot, but not enough money in the world can make you palatable if you're a jackass. You know what I mean?
Well, and I certainly hope she has ample time to prove what a jackass she is.
Yeah, although, I mean, who knows? Because as everyone has said, I don't remember who said it exactly, you can never underestimate the stupidity of the American voter.
Right, you'll never go broke.
Right, all that. So I'm just saying the problem that I have is that, yes, like you said, this is a Democratic-leaning state. Where is the leadership? And why don't you have just a plethora?
Well, no, I would. I mean, isn't there a next generation of Democrats?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, what's up with the? Hey, listen, I have no idea what's going on in this state.
I mean, my God, isn't there a 45 to 50-year-old California Democrat capable of being governor?
Well, that's what I'm saying, and you would think there would be. I don't know. Listen, I have no idea what's going on. It's the damnedest thing. I'm looking at this. I'm thinking, you know, what in the world? Because she can just outspin, I guess, and buy it if they do.
Well, isn't that the plan?
Yeah, and they're going to, you know, but the upside is that they're trying to pass, you know, legalized pot here, so you know what demographic that's going to bring out, right? A bunch of young people.
Yeah.
I mean, then apparently this past Tuesday we had an election, and people were showing up. That's how dumb people are. But they were showing up because they thought, oh, is this the election where I can vote?
Is this where I get to vote to get high?
Yes, and I was.
You're going to eat that, dude.
No, because, see, that initiative, I mean, I shudder to think the percentage of folks coming out for that. I mean, I think it might be out of this world. Let's talk about what is real serious for people, okay?
Yeah, well, you know, look, got no job.
Shit, might as well be able to smoke without getting
right. Right, you know, at least catch a buzz and have some Doritos or something.
And not be locked away. No. I'm not belittling it because I think it's kind of interesting, although I'm not too sure if it's going to pass unless you get a big turnout. But you remember the voters here voted down those two corporate initiatives. I mean, I could have kissed whoever was near me that those two lost. I was really surprised. The Prop 16 and 17 sponsored directly by corporations.
That does speak well. But and that's one of those things, Sandra. You know, we're forever asking why won't Democrats vote their wallets? Well, you know, maybe in California they'll vote their hookahs.
Well, you know, I mean, it was just sort of interesting because I was despairing about 16, because 16 was actually going to allow PG&E, you've heard of PG&E, right?
Yeah, Pacific Gas and Electric, right?
Right, electric, was going to, you know, they had this initiative to try to fool people to think that you will have to have a two-thirds vote in order to establish your own utility, i.e. public utilities. Can you imagine? And so they spent $45 million to pass this, and it lost 52%.
To what? Like 48%? Yeah.
Yeah, and 48%. 48% said yes, and that's what scared me, because I'm like, who are those people?
Well, right, and PG&E knows that they've just got to get it back on the ballot and convince 1.1% of the electorate, and they're done.
Yeah, but every paper came out strongly against it. They had no money, but it just sort of, people sort of resonated with, like, oh, no, this one corporation, it just is obnoxious.
Like Enron, doesn't it?
Well, I'm not saying that the United decision at the Supreme Court is going to backfire, but there is an element to that. Like, you know, no matter what you want to say about Americans, sometimes they're really not into being bowled over, okay? Bullied, you know?
Yeah, we like to be finessed.
Yes, you know, just at least, you know, there's a seeming idea of fair play and all that. So I think that people, you know, if they get a look-see at some of this crap, yeah, you may get the kind of outcomes like we had Tuesday, because I was like, wow. And they're freaking out. PG&E spent $45
million. That's. Listen,
you know what? I'm gonna have to call you back.
That's cool. Yeah.
Okay.
Day at the pool. I understand.
All right. Bye.
Bye now. You know, that's what. Look, that's what family values mean. Sandra's out there living some family values. Got to go take care of the youngins at the pool. That matters. It really does. Onward we go. No. Okay. So, I mentioned lots of stuff out there today, and there is morans and the like. We've talked a little bit about the 14th Amendment. Now, you know this clown out in Arizona, Russell Pierce, you know he is aligned with skinheads and neo-Nazis and white supremacists and that God knows that you couldn't get him to admit it with a gun to his head. But you don't have to get him to admit it because the proof is there, you know, unless you can't believe your lying eyes and your lying ears. This guy is a neo-Nazi. But that's okay. He's still good enough to show up on Bill O'Reilly. So, you know, sort of a dual Moran nomination for this evening. Russell Pierce and Bill O'Reilly. Let's try this. On what? Yeah, on the 14th Amendment.
The state of Arizona is aggressively confronting its problem with illegal aliens, and that has resulted in a worldwide controversy, as you know. On the heels of a new law allowing authorities to check nationality when folks are engaged in a police matter, comes word the state of Arizona may now deal with anchor babies. Those are infants born in the USA to illegal alien moms. The babies automatically get American citizenship. Joining us now from Phoenix, Arizona, State Senator Russell Pierce. So what do you want the state of Arizona? I mean, it is a federal law now. Federal law says any baby born in the United States under any circumstances is a U.S. citizen.
Now, see, that's what makes Bill O'Reilly a moron all the time. Federal law. It's federal law, you see. No, it's not federal law, Bill. It's constitutional law. Federal law is the statutes of the U.S. Code, et cetera, et cetera. This is a constitutional provision that guarantees citizenship to children born within the territorial confines of the United States, right? Yeah, you're right. But he says, now it's federal law.
And you want the state of Arizona to override that law?
First of all, that's not the law. It's an unconstitutional declaration of citizenship to those born. In the Wong Kim decision before the Supreme...
Really? This neo-Nazi skinhead horse's ass says that the 14th Amendment is not the law of the land? Anybody want... Oh, my goodness. And you know, you would expect this from a neo-Nazi skinhead type. Let's go look at the text of the 14th Amendment just for the fun of it. Because he says it's not the law of the land. Let's see. Article 14, Amendment 14, Section 1. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. No state shall make or embrace any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. Due process and equal protection, Section 1. Section 2 is apportionment of representatives based on population. Section 3 is as touches upon not allowing anybody who's been engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the United States to hold office. This is not complicated stuff. Validity of the public debt is Section 4. Section 5 is Congress may enforce Sections 1 through 4 by appropriate legislation. Section 1 is what we're concerned with. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. That's the sentence. It's not nearly as hinky as, say, the Second Amendment, which is full of weird little clauses that make it subject to being interpreted in strange ways. No, not at all. But what? Russell Pierce? No, it doesn't mean what... The Fourth Amendment doesn't mean what it obviously appears to mean. Let us continue, by all means.
The court had made it very clear. The statements from the senators at the time when the 14th Amendment was written made it clear. It did not pertain to aliens or those who did not have legal domicile in the United States. It's the most irrational and self-defeating provision you could have.
Okay, but let me stop you there.
To make it illegal, to enter the United States.
You disagree with the law, and millions of Americans agree with you. But subsequently, the courts have ruled that this anchor baby situation is valid. And you know it.
No.
And notice how they perpetuate the meme, this anchor baby situation. And these are right-wingers. Remember the ones who are all about the right to life? Yeah. Strange, ain't it? You and me, normal people with fully functioning brains and ethical centers and moral capabilities and stuff, our little heads would explode if we tried to embrace, on the one hand, a right to life, which is actually a right to run your life, but a right to life at the same time we were complaining about babies being born in America. So Russell Pierce wants to end abortion, of course, but he don't want them babies what's born here to be no citizens. He wants them to be little slaves. I thought we already had a little dust-up about that whole slavery thing, but apparently it was lost on Russell Pierce. Let's try again. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Anybody? I got the right button, I'm pretty sure. Okay, maybe not. Hey, welcome to the program.
I was hearing someone on that one.
On which one?
On the line was bleeding through. I heard a faint hello.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear it. So maybe I am having phone troubles. Who knows?
Well.
But I don't have any problem getting you, David.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's good. I have a nomination for Moran Monday, and it's actually one that I thought you were going to open the program with, unless I missed it. Did you talk about Glenn Beck's new book?
The Overton window? No, I haven't gotten there yet. I have real issues with the possibility of actually promoting that nasty little screed.
If you read some passages, there's actually a quote in the book when there's a sex scene, and one of the lines is "Don't tease the Panther."
No, you can't do that to me, even on Moran Monday, David. There's a sex scene, and the line is, "Don't tease the Panther."
Yeah, and then there's another part.
Now, bear in mind, this is a novel written by Glenn Beck.
Yes, and actually, let's be fair. Glenn didn't write it. Kevin Balf did. Let's get the name right. He just didn't put his name on it. Kevin Balf, Glenn Beck's up. Infamous ghostwriter of all his work. So Kevin Balf didn't even put his name on it. That's how bad it was. There's actually a passage in the book. See, I'm going to torture you some more, Bob.
Oh, no.
There's actually a passage in the book where he seduces his woman by talking about the flat tax.
No, there isn't.
Yes, there is.
No, there isn't.
Yes, there is.
No, there isn't.
Yes, there is. I'm not joking.
Seduces his woman by talking dirty to her about the flat tax.
Yeah, it's a body pass.
Well, but you know what? He's a Randian little freak, so that's not anybody who's ever read the sex scenes in Atlas Shrugged.
And then the other Moran I want to nominate is Rand Paul for...
For being too cheap to pay for board certification?
Yeah.
What a piece of work he is. Yeah, I've got that, and in fact, I've got an email about it I got to get to here in a little bit. That's astonishing. Now, he holds himself out as a board-certified, he's Rand Paul, board-certified libertarian ophthalmologist, right?
Yeah.
Only he hasn't been since, what, 2005?
About that.
Yeah, that's precious. And it would cost him how much per year to be board certified, but he's too cheap? $150 a year.
Holy cow.
Yeah, that's going to break Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist.
And just to piggyback on what Jim said about the, you should really get some clips of Rachel Maddow and Bill Frist, especially that moment where they're debating each other.
Oh, I'm going to have to go find that, yeah.
And the one last thing I wanted to mention, because I wanted to make this a quick call, was June 21st, you should tune in and watch you won't be able to watch it on HBO, but this movie will be circulated throughout the internet everywhere as soon as it's aired. But everyone's talking about the movie Gasland.
Yeah.
And it's about hydraulic fracturing of the land to
for what, Marcellus shale gas?
Yes. And there's actually a scene in the movie, Bob, I kid you not, where the guy takes a lighter to the faucet.
Boom.
Ignites a whole flame just to show how much gas is in his water.
Nice.
So June 21st, everyone, Gasland, you want to check that out?
That sounds, yeah, very much, yeah.
That sounds like it would be up your alley.
It will be. We've got a lot of concerns about the Marcellus Shale here because we've got it under West Virginia, it's under New York, it's under Pennsylvania. And of course, the gas industry is hell-bent to get it. And it destroys millions upon millions of gallons of water.
And one last thing, if you can, you probably want to check out the Van Jones interview that he did with Tom Hartman today.
Oh, wow, yeah, definitely. Oh, wow, Van will go on Tom Hartman. That's cool.
Yeah, we haven't heard that much from Van, but he says some things about what Obama needs to speak about tomorrow. Do you have any comments on what you'd like to hear? Although this is strictly hypothetical and it doesn't mean anything, but what would you like to hear from?
Oh,
you knock out the park for Obama tomorrow.
I'm hesitant even to speculate on that because whatever I say I want, I know I ain't getting.
I think he'll mention clean coal at least once.
In an energy speech?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he'll probably say coal keeps the lights on too. And then I'll have to run naked in the yard some more.
Well, Bob, one last thing. Just remember, you can't tease the panther. You just can't.
Don't tease the panther. I'm never. You know what? Bob, I'm never going to be able to look at an image of a panther again. You've ruined that for me, Dave.
I know. I have.
But you know,
I actually did want to mention one last thing to torture you. Have you seen the video of the monkey having sex with the frog?
No.
Actually,
no, my mind didn't even want to know that there was video of a monkey having sex with a frog.
There's actually a video that's picking up quite the traction, people. It's pretty amazing because I'm only going to leave it at this, and I'm not going to be that graphic, but apparently the monkey is very bored, so he decides to pry the frog's mouth open and...
Ah!
And you know what's disturbing about it? Everyone else in the...
This may be worse than the smoking baby.
I know, but here's the best part. After he was done having fun, he put the frog under his armpit for later. How's that for your dinner, people?
Save some for later.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
All right, Bob. Well,
maybe
I'll send you that video to torture you.
I know you will, and I'll watch it, and I'll hate you for it.
Well, there. What are friends for, Bob? What are friends for?
No. Not that, David. Not that. Jesus.
That's what the YouTube was made for, people.
Well, yeah. It was. Yeah. Well, just like the internet was made for porn, and we all understand that.
Yeah. So YouTube hasn't figured a way out to put porn on YouTube yet. But they'll figure out something.
Sooner or later.
Sooner or later.
Oh, frogs, monkeys.
Yeah. All right, Bob.
They all went to heaven in a little rowboat. Oh, dear God.
Later.
Later, David.
Pop
culture correspondent David from Maine. And see, now I know how you guys are. You're all out there YouTube looking, searching YouTube monkey has sex with frog. Can you not wait? Jesus, we live in a world where there's video of monkeys having sex with frogs. We've gone from lighting farts to lighting faucets. I want to go back to Kansas, Wizard. And Toto, too. And Glenn Beck with novels with sex scenes about not teasing the panther. And, ooh, baby, it makes me hot when you tell me about your 15%. Eesh. Ron and Raleigh's not doing too well either. Hey, Bob, how about the sex scenes in Bill O'Reilly's and William F. Buckley's or Lynn Cheney's books, for that matter? Makes me want to swear off the old in-out, in-out. Yeah, Ron had he's threatening to turn me into the hillbilly committee. Enjoying soccer? We're going to have to pull your hillbilly card. That's too continental by half, Bob. Thanks, Ron. Glad to know somebody's out there paying attention. Wow. Onward we go. Somebody got to be here somewhere. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Oh, there, you're back.
Yes. No, I just had to, you know, make sure everything was whatever.
Everybody okay at the pool?
Oh, yeah, you know.
Got the little floaty things going on in the water wings, and yeah.
Well, yeah, they've been taking lessons like for the last year, so they're actually doing pretty well.
Cool. You know, that's what I said when you had to go. Family values, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what they really are.
They, you know, they swim. You know how, well, I know how I was. Anywhere there's a pool, you know, I was there.
No, when you had to run, Sandra, I ran off to Russell Pierce and Bill O'Reilly. And you know, Russell Pierce, the freak from Arizona. See, Arizona, Alabama, you know, it all runs together after a while.
You mean that whole, their fake anchor baby BS?
Yeah, the 14th Amendment doesn't really say what it says.
No, the 14th Amendment is one of those amendments, like a lot of them, that's pretty damn clear. Hello. I mean, it's, you know what I mean? The first line says something about, if you're born here, you're a citizen, right?
Right. I mean, yeah, it's like I said, it's not all complicated like the Second Amendment is.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like, it's pretty straightforward. It's not, I mean, because the problem they were trying to rectify was pretty damn straightforward, right?
Slavery?
You know, what the hell? They have to deal with the offspring. Oh, God, it's so disgusting. Are they trying to pass a law to repeal the 14th Amendment at a state level? I mean, I'm confused.
Yeah, and the problem is the 14th Amendment even says you can't do that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm just like, and they keep talking about anchor babies. It's so gross, that meme or term, isn't it?
Oh, it's to come out of the mouth of a right-wing fetus lover.
It's horrifying. I mean, yeah, what's up with that? I mean, I guess...
I mean, it really is plain, Sandra. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. That's the sentence. That's
right,
it.
That's the section one, right? I mean,
yeah, and then the second sentence of section one says, no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge that.
That was the whole idea, you know?
Yeah, because back then they knew that as soon as they passed that, South Carolina would pass a law saying, yeah, but not us.
Right. No, I'm just saying. I mean, that was a whole, you know, anyway, I just really can't believe how far these people are trying to push.
But what's sad is that you know, with very few exceptions, and the exceptions being the Keith Olbermans and Rachel Maddows of the world, nobody's pointing out that Russell Pierce is a white supremacist. I mean, he goes to Klan rallies. He really does.
No, that whole clique down there, you know, I went to that one website. I can't even remember the name of it, but it was, you know, sort of as featured on Stormfront. And, you know, the various Klansmen right there saying hello to you from the screen. I mean, it's just as blatant as can be.
And yet this ass is treated as if he has anything logical or reasonable or rational to offer the political debate in this country. That, you know, and again, this is the curse of this false presumption that there's always an equal and compelling and otherwise valid side to every argument.
Oh, no. I mean, that is so vacuous and insidious, that whole thing you're just talking about right there.
It really is disturbing. So much so that it seems like Obama is willing to go down the drain to hold on to that shit, you know?
And I don't understand.
And I don't understand what's going on with that. I mean,
you know, that's like David saying, you know, what do you hope he says tomorrow?
I was just about to ask you. I thought maybe you could tell me what you, because I'm sort of like.
No, I'm not speculating anymore. And as David noted, you know, what do you want to bet he talks about? He says something about clean coal.
Oh no, I hadn't even thought about that. I'm too busy thinking that he is gonna placate these corporations in some manner. Like, remind us that we need them. You know what I mean? Some BS like that. Some DLC dribble. I mean, you know, some people are hoping that he's going to go left all of a sudden. I'm like, I'm over.
Yeah, in one hand and in the other and see which one fills up first. I know. That's where I am.
You know, and I just don't, you know, I'm not buying it. But what I am interested in is, you know, they scrambling. That's what I notice now. They certainly are scrambling with his, oh, you better set up an escrow fund. I mean, is he begging that corporation?
What would have been wrong with the escrow fund on April 20th?
Wow, no, listen.
Just didn't think of it back then?
Well, no, but the whole way it's being framed is, oh, they may. And it's like, may, please. I mean, what is this?
But see, he really is faced with one of these St. Paul all things to all people moments tomorrow, because on the one hand, the Florida coastline is not nasty yet, and they don't want any offshore drilling. On the other hand, you got Piyush Jindal over here in Louisiana saying, well, just because we're getting our coastline ruined doesn't mean we need to stop drilling.
Oh, yeah, I know, which is mind-blowing, I have to say.
And placate both sides?
Well, see, that's the problem, because, I mean, when he started out once again, as he seems to always, when he came out with this, oh, well, drilling now is safer, you know, when he announced his let's open every coast to offshore drilling speech on the 31st, right, of March. So I'm not too sure. I don't know what tack he's going to take if he's just going to focus in on this corporation. But because 39% of the stock is held by Americans and the rest is held by Brits, you know, he has to figure out some way of placating that madness. Watch.
Oh, no, I will not take cards in that game.
No, I just think that, I mean, I feel for him on some level, but I'm also, very distressed by the idea that it's, unfortunately, I hate to say it, that it's him who's in charge of this now. Isn't that horrible to say?
And I guess the question for me is, I keep coming back because I guess I'm in some sort of denial. I want to say that all of this icky corporatism, I want to say that that's Rahm Emanuel. But you know what? Rahm Emanuel's not the president.
And not only that, but Rahm Emanuel wasn't at the round table for business speaking in 2006.
Nope,
don't
sure
forget.
Wasn't.
Don't
no.
forget.
And he wasn't faculty at the University of Chicago either.
Right. So if and he didn't say, Rahm Emanuel didn't say, I gave BP too much credit. I thought they could handle it. I mean, that was one of his Obama's quotes, which I was like, oh, my God.
Well, have you seen this business that's out now about the relief well?
Please tell. You know, do I even want to know? What is it now? I mean, I can't imagine. What's the deal?
You so don't want to know. They're drilling on the relief well. And they're having to file their federal relief well drilling filing documents. And there's only one problem. They're saying that they're admitting that even with this relief well, that they're really not fully prepared to deal with stuff that could go wrong.
Well, of course they're not. They, you know, I mean, this is what I'm saying. Remember we were told, oh, they're going to junk shot it, all different ways they're going to stop it, and then they came out with this, oh, by August. Remember I told you, oh, no, Christmas years. You see what I'm saying? I don't, at this point, I don't believe it, because when they do those relief wells, and normally, they have to do them simultaneously. That's what I thought was the key.
Yeah, well, on the front end.
Right. No, when it's first going on. When you're establishing the whole process, isn't that what they did in Brazil?
Right. It is part of the SOP for putting in a well at all.
Right. Okay. And so the one where they had to dig a relief well after the fact was in Lookie-See, 100 feet or something, 500 feet. You know
yeah.
what I mean? It was in shallow water, and that took 10 months. So, Bob, what the hell? This is a mile down.
Oh, I know. And did you see this email that's been released by the House Energy and Commerce Committee?
No, what's this about?
This is an email that came from an engineer talking about the BP Horizon well.
Oh, and it's a nightmare well?
Yeah, this is a nightmare well.
Yeah, no, I
that was
that.
Sent 6 days before it blew.
Yeah, no. This is straight up criminal. I mean, that shouldn't be debatable now. But what I'm sick with is this whole notion that, oh, no, we have to tiptoe now because there's pensioners and all these people at risk. We already been down this road. It's like, too bad. You shouldn't invest in some dodgy.
Right. Maybe you might. And see, again, I go back to that question I was asking last week. Why are pension plans invested in stuff like Massey Energy and BP?
Well, exactly.
Why would you do that to your pensioners?
Yeah, this is money that these people are supposed to live on because they can't work anymore because they're too damn old. Pensioners. They're done working. And yet now they have to be scared because the corporation that has most of their money is some...
But do you see how this kind of pulls the rubber mask off on the whole on the whole dirty process, Sandra? Because we see now that's how it works. That's how corporations gain the power they have, is that they threaten government, they threaten us, they threaten civil society as a whole, and they first and foremost threaten the people who are invested in them. Don't say anything about us or our value will go down, and then you're going to eat cat food.
Yeah, oh, no. I mean, that's what's going on. In the meanwhile, though, it's still flowing nonstop. Is it not? Is it worse? Has it stopped? What's the length?
No, it has not stopped. It is, I don't know how you define worse anymore, you know?
Well, I heard somebody talking about the seabed, you know, and that's when I just step away. I can't go.
Oh, that it's cracking open?
Yeah, I don't know what that's about. I don't want to know. I don't.
Oh, that's a science fiction movie. That's a science fiction movie nightmare that kept you up at night when you were eight. Only it's coming true now.
What?
No. What I was going to say earlier. This is the certification. This is a beautiful thing. This is the certification for the relief well. Okay. It comes off of Rachel Maddow's blog. And she writes, the worst case scenario, as they see it, is a blowout resulting. This is from the relief well, okay? This is, and I'm not, I'm sorry, I don't mean to sound like I'm talking down. I just want to be absolutely clear that we're not talking about the problem well right now. We're talking about the relief well, the one that's going to solve the problem. And Rachel Maddow writes on her blog, the worst-case scenario, as they, meaning BP, see it, is a blowout of the relief well, resulting in 240,000 barrels of oil gushing into the Gulf of Mexico each day. And she notes, despite their obvious trouble with 40,000 barrels of oil a day, BP officials write this in exploration plan for the relief wells. This is the language from the exploration plan for the relief well. I hereby certify that BP Exploration and Production, Inc., which, of course, is a shell company that barely has any funds at all, and that's done so that BP, the overarching BP, can be protected. BP Exploration and Production, Inc. has the capability to respond
to the maximum extent practicable. Why am I suddenly hearing echoes of with all deliberate speed, Sandra? You know what I mean? Has the capability to respond to the maximum extent practicable to a worst-case discharge or a substantial threat of such a discharge resulting from the activities proposed on our exploration plan. So they're saying that they can respond to a massive 240,000 barrel per day spill, gush, when they can't handle 40. Because this is going to be a mile down, too. They're not going to somewhere that's not a mile down on the seafloor.
Right. I mean, they have this relief well has to go perpendicular with the faulty well, right, at some point.
Yeah, right. They're trying to tap that same vein.
Right. I'm just saying. And so, I mean, what you just said sounds crazy on top of the hit and miss factor that has to be factor in here. I mean, there's no way you're going to hit it on the first time, right?
Right. And Rachel, well, I don't have, you know, you're going to hit a bullet with a bullet? And Rachel posts a link to the PDF of the whole exploration plan. And she notes that they say that if the worst does happen, you know, the 240,000 barrels a day, if that does happen, that it'll take them no more than 100 to 150 days to fix it. That's all. No more.
Yeah, but they're not fixing this, which is a fraction of what that outcome is.
Right. Right.
You know what? And I mean, what kind of double BS is that? Wow. I mean, the whole thing is just so disturbing because why aren't there reports daily about this? Like, what exactly is going on? Have you noticed?
Right, and no, there's a lot of reporting, but there's not a lot in it.
Yeah, that's what I mean, and not sort of substantial. But, you know, the thing that's interesting about this whole thing is that they can't escape it, though, because then that shit washes up like it hit Alabama the other day, right?
Yeah, and then
you can't hide. You see what I'm saying?
Right, you're just looking at it.
You're like, oh, shit. I was like, this is, you know, I'd be goddamn with this. But anyway, you know, I really wanted to ask you, did you read that article I sent you about the people get the debt thing?
Oh, yeah, I did read that, and it was horrifying. Just to bring people up to speed, Sandra sent along an article that sort of makes you go about human beings, American citizens, who are routinely being put in jail over debt. When I thought all along that we had eliminated debtor's prison.
Yeah, no, it was just incredible.
And it's not in Alabama. This particular case was arising out of Minnesota.
Well, and the whole idea that Minnesota has the most credit, you know, whatever, lenders, laws. I mean, they didn't really go into what that is. But, I mean, the thing that was killing me about that article was that these four people, why didn't they tell me? And, you know, first of all, no political efficacy and no information, you know, is like these four people don't know what hit them. And the worst was like, well, you go to jail, but you got to give all this information because guess what? A few weeks down the road, they're going to hit you anyway in your accounts and garnish your – did you notice that about it?
Oh, yeah. It's designed so that you can't get out from under it.
Right, so when you go, if you don't go to court, they can arrest you, but the way you can get out from under is to give them all your financial information, and then they get you by garnishing your checks and hitting your account. You see what I mean? So
damned if you do.
It was just hit. I just thought the whole thing was...
And some of this stuff is like out of Robin Hood era, where people are, in, you know, one person was put in jail until they scraped up $300.
I know, and as little as 8.
I mean, okay, let's advance it a little bit. No, that's Charles Dickens stuff.
No, it was like a fine from a lumber yard. I mean, it was all so pedestrian and just hideous. And this poor woman who, you know, didn't know what hit her. She got pulled over. Next thing you know, she's being fondled in the elevator. You know, as she puts it, she had to spend 20 hours, you know, with real criminals.
Yeah, the nasty ones.
Quote. And it's just, you know, and these horrible predators who set up these companies and buy off this debt on literally pennies on the dollar, right?
Oh, yeah. And then we'll ride your ass into the ground.
I just was, I mean, the whole, it was just, it's just so disturbing because, unfortunately, this country has, you know, a deep penal prison system to accommodate.
And a punishment fetish to go with it.
Right. So there's already that in place. And we have a media that will not report on it. So, you know, they can hit the people who don't matter. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it has the potential to just be,
And just for the sake of just so folks know, and I hate to even I hate that I feel like I even have to point this out. The people in this story that you sent were white folks. You know?
Well, yeah, we're not going to get, God help us, we're not going to get an article about, you know, what's going on with the people of color. You know that shit is.
Well, no, that's the thing. The chickens are coming home to roost in the White Houses now.
Well, yeah, that's why it's in the paper. You know, I mean, the subprime thing was, you know, was going on, years before, you know, in the community of color. You know what I'm saying? Who cares? You know, it wasn't until it sort of seeped out and brought a French bank down, then all of a sudden it was news. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
But, anyway, I just, that article really kind of, you know, sort of sent me back reeling. And the $1 trillion minerals, that was another one that was like, oh.
Oh, yeah, that one sent my head spinning yesterday, Sandra, because I don't, you know, I'm seeing reference to this story, and it's the one, it was out of the New York Times yesterday. Headline reads, U.S. identifies vast mineral riches in Afghanistan. And to be honest, I read that, and I did a spit take at the monitor. You know, yeah. One of those.
No, that was, it just sort of popped up as I get the little, whatever, the email.
Me too.
And I was like, oh, you got to be out of your damn mind.
Because everywhere else that I'm seeing this story referenced, it's, you know, new hope for Afghanistan, a brighter future on Afghanistan's horizon with this story underneath it.
Oh, you're joking. Are you kidding?
No.
I didn't really, so I just took the one from the New York Times. I didn't really go exploring. They had morphed it into that shit.
Yeah, this is a bright new day for Afghanistan.
Well, no, this is all about the fact that this surge and what's going on there is just turning into a complete disaster, right?
Oh yeah, because over at Truthout today, from something called Global Post, I saw a story by Ben Gilbert, headline: Uptick in Afghan Attacks Tests U.S. Forces. So, with the first high-pitched cracks of AK-47 fire, the Afghan National Army soldiers jumped out of their unarmored Ford Ranger pickup truck. That's the Afghan Army. And disappeared behind a small hill. The gunner on the American armored truck behind them, Sergeant E. Daniel Witherspoon of 1st Platoon Bravo Troop, 133 Cavalry Regiment, yelled for his driver to stop. Somebody's shooting at us! Well, you know what? They're going to be shooting a lot more now that they know that there's gold in them thar hills.
Well, no, but the thing that's killing me is that are they seriously thinking that anybody with a couple of brain cells, come on, you know, they just, what, a group of Pentagon geologists just sort of discovered this way.
Yeah, with the Indiana Jones music playing in the background.
Last week, right? Come on. You know, I mean,
and wait, did you see what they're focusing on them having the most of? I mean, there's gold and there's iron.
What, lithium?
But they're all worked up because they got a big old bunch of lithium. And I read that and I flashed back on Van Jones 2 years ago in March saying, if we do not have social change to accompany our transition to a green economy,
the next wars will be fought over the lithium to power our battery-powered tanks.
Oh, good Lord. Well, yeah.
And so, you know, but since I come from an area that is subject to economic miracle of mining, I just looked at it. I looked at the story and I said, A, what this means is we ain't never leaving because we don't want the Chinese to have it. And B, well, you know, they're Afghans. They are hillbillies. They're hillbillies that are meaner than my hillbillies. But they're hillbillies. And it's just another case of going in and just completely screwing up the hillbillies' world.
Well, listen, I have to say, I mean, a few years back, I had to read Brzezinski's The Great Game. You know that book?
Yes.
And I'd be goddamn, Bob, if this fool ain't caught. He laid it out. Laid it out.
Sooner or later, you know, and that's the thing. We kept looking at, you know, early on, we all had the maps when we first went into Afghanistan, and I remember being called un-American for pointing a map out to someone and saying, notice where the pipeline from the Caspian Sea Basin has to cross to get to the sea, to get to the seaport in Pakistan. Oh, look, it's Afghanistan. And we're there, why? For freedom? Excuse me?
Or some freak in a cave?
Right.
No, I mean, but the thing is that, I mean, there's just no end. It really is quite horrific because at the same time, we got this fool begging for $60 billion to save thousands upon thousands of public sector jobs. He's like saying, oh, we need to get this money because, you know, it's going to send the economy back into recession. You should have thought about that months ago, but they're panicking now because this is the Democrats.
Yeah, because it turned out Paul Krugman was right.
Well, no, but it's disgusting that this party, his party, can't pass a bill like this, but they can not take care of derivatives, okay, all sorts of money for this war, and then they're going to subject us to austerity? That's really going to get the tax revenue.
Right, because at the same time they're talking about this $60 billion of extra stimulus, we're also talking, we've still got a what? A debt commission?
Oh, no, but you have to remember that in this begging that he was doing, he also said, well, after the election, you know, the deficit committee will be, you guys will vote on that. I mean, he actually said this in this article that I was reading. It's all so out of this world. It's like, you got to pass this shit now because we got an election. But afterwards, you know, da-di-da-di-da. And I'm sitting here thinking, oh, no, this is bad. You know, they really are going after what's left of the safety net, I guess. I'm not too sure because the austerity thing is so weird because, yeah, you're cutting deficits, a government deficit, in order to do what? Because if you continue with the unemployment, you lose tax revenue anyway. You see what I mean? It's like a debt spiral.
Right.
Whereas if you deficit spend, you create jobs and the tax revenue increases, which can service the deficit. Right.
Right. But you see, Sandra, because of the nature of the media, and I'm sorry to keep coming back to this tired little tin drum of mine, because of the nature of the control of the media structure in this country, what happens? Well, the right wing puts out the talking point that deficit spending has never created a job, and it gets repeated as if it had just come down off Sinai.
Right.
And it's repeated as truth.
No, but see, the thing is, all you have to do is look at, I mean, we're not talking about anything in the past. We're not talking about a closed economy where Keynesian, you know, can sort of exist without all the holes in the tub. You can look at Ireland. They were subjected to austerity. The market's still treating them like bastards.
Because that's what the market does.
Right, but I'm saying it's like it's just absurd. And all these governments are talking about austerity now, and it's just, it's like 1937. I mean, I hate to keep dragging in history, but you know how it is. Shit.
I know.
It's like Roosevelt heeded these deficit freaks and sent the U.S. economy
back into a hole.
Back into a hole. And I fear they're
what was that cat's name? Marshall?
No, the one that wanted to liquidate labor and liquidate everything.
Yeah.
Mellon.
Was that the he was on FDR's cabinet?
Oh, maybe that was Hoover's Treasury Secretary. One of them freaks wanted to liquidate. This is now our chance to liquidate labor and every. You know what I mean? I think he was sort of the treasurer under Hoover, but.
Well, in 1930, it was. I keep thinking it was somebody named Marshall, not the Marshall of the Marshall Plan.
Not general, no.
No, that kept hollering about the deficit until FDR knuckled under.
Well, yeah, no. It was a group of them, like there always are.
But this is integral to a previous conversation, Sandra, because you know we ask questions about what are we going to do with idled oil workers in the Gulf if we're not going to drill out there anymore, and that's 58,000 jobs. What the hell ever happened to worker retraining? And I realize BP doesn't want to do it because that's not part of their profit structure, but it is more than an appropriate use of government.
Well, have you noticed that Obama can't even mouth any sort of job creation, like really?
No, that goes back to what I was listening to last week in D.C. He can't even mouth that stuff because they don't believe in manufacturing. They don't believe in production. They don't think that actually exists anymore. They don't want it.
Well, there's also an interesting article talking about how all the middle sort of management jobs have, like, completely disappeared. So you really do have a two-tier, high-skilled, high-paying jobs, and then low-wage, low-skilled jobs. And what used to be in between has, like, just shrunk immensely since 1984. I mean, so there's some really structural realignments that are going on in this economy, but we've got 300 million people.
Yeah, and oddly enough, at the same time that the New York Times breaks this story about vast mineral riches in Afghanistan, which I'm now being told by Ron and Raleigh, that this stuff was all discovered by the Soviets during their occupation. And the info's been buried in CIA reports for 20 years, and Dick Cheney knew about it, Ron says, according to a new report that's come out. At the same time that that's all breaking, and I'm going, well, we're not leaving in Afghanistan, and the Afghans are screwed. Lo and behold, on the same day, or the day before, actually, Bob Herbert writes a column in the Times called The Courage to Leave. Did you see this?
Right. Oh, yeah. No, I follow him because he's been kind of, out there in the last few columns. I mean, in a good way. Like, he seems to be losing it.
Well, I mean, my God, I wouldn't go anywhere that wasn't in an armored vehicle if I was him after penning a paragraph like this. I mean, because this is going to get Sean Hannity and all those American exceptionalists seven shades of pissed off. The U.S. doesn't win wars anymore. We just funnel the stressed and underpaid troops in and out of the combat zones while all the while showering taxpayer billions on the contractors and giant corporations that view the horrors of war as a heaven-sent bonanza. BP, as we've been told repeatedly recently, is one of the largest suppliers of fuel to the wartime U.S. military.
Yeah, no, that's some real shit. No, I remember that exactly what you read because I felt the same way. I thought, wow.
Do not get on small aircraft, Bob Herbert.
Oh, no. Listen, stay your ass in New York. Be careful. Because, funny you should read that. That was off the hook.
Because that's darting the neck stuff from the right wing.
Oh, that's straight up. And all around. It's like saying hello to Obama. What the hell are you doing?
I mean, and then this a little bit further down. There is no overall game plan, no real strategy or coherent goals to guide the fighting of U.S. forces. It's just a mind-numbing, soul-chilling, body-destroying slog, month after month, year after pointless year. The 18-year-olds fighting and increasingly dying in Afghanistan now were 9 or 10 when the World Trade Center and Pentagon were attacked in 2001.
Right.
How's that for a little ice water on the back of the neck?
Yeah, no. Hideous. Absolutely hideous. And at the same time, can you tell me I was listening, I forget who I was listening to, Daniel Ellsberg, I think, was saying, talking about how Obama has surpassed any president ever to prosecute whistleblowers.
Yes.
And that blew me away. I'm like...
And that was within the context of, what's his name, Julian Assange?
No, where is dude? He disappeared. Have you noticed?
Yeah, he went deep cover. I think. Well, you know, nobody knows where he is because he was getting ready to drop the dime on a whole bunch of secret stuff at WikiLeaks.
I'm still waiting for that because they arrested dude who they claim gave it to him.
Right, and they will kill him.
And with that man, they took his passport in Australia. That was the last I heard. Now, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I don't know where that dude is, but, I mean, it's pretty damn scary because I'm wondering if WikiLeaks are going to have a – because they have another video apparently of some sort of murderous encounter for the poor Afghans on video. And then they have, like, this sort of 200,000 I don't know what they call them, teletext or something from the State Department.
Yeah.
I mean, all that just sounds like, wow. But this man has disappeared. And I'm thinking...
Well, you know, it's so funny because at the same time that this story was breaking, lo and behold, what movie was running on FX, you know, the Fox Movie Network?
What's that?
They were running Will Smith and Gene Hackman in Enemy of the State.
Oh, that movie, yeah. You know, that's funny. I saw that, yes.
And, you know, and I just sit there in front of the TV, and I just sort of let the waves of irony roll over me. Because here's a guy being chased all over hell and half of Texas because he knows something he ain't supposed to know. And meanwhile, there really is that guy out there. And the United States security establishment keeps saying, well, no, we just want to talk to him.
Yeah,
with him strapped to a board and his head in the toilet.
Well, no, I'm still reeling at the idea that, you know, President Bush said, yeah, we waterboarded him and I'd do it again. I'm like, that is an admission of breaking a law right there.
Yeah, it is. It is a prosecutable offense.
And they locking up people for $300, Bob.
See, your mind goes to the same place mine does.
Oh no, I can't miss these things, and it really is disturbing. But anyway, listen, I guess I'll leave you because it's too much, man. Too much.
It's a little on the batty side of things.
But actually, you know, yeah, I'm glad you sort of tuned in with that WikiLeaks guy because I think that story right there. Wow.
Well, I
hope. You know, I mean, I hope he's not disappeared. I hope he's just...
And, you know, there's Daniel Ellsberg, who knows a thing or two, Sandra, about feeling threatened by the government.
Hell yeah.
And he did not hesitate. You know, it's not like he was sitting there talking to unicorns and imaginary things like he wasn't entirely home or anything. He was rock solid, same as you and me. And Daniel Ellsberg, in front of the camera, said, Julian Assange's life is in danger.
Oh, no, no joke. And, no. It's stunning because I don't know if you heard an interview with that Assad guy, Assange. He did an interview with Greenwald.
Yeah, and...
Yeah, I mean, you know, a while back, but, yeah, so I just hope that he's, you know, in a safe house or whatever, however they got it set up, because I think the U.S. is gunning for him.
Dart in the neck.
Mm. Anyway, all right, listen, I'll talk to you soon.
All right, see you, Sandra.
Bye
now. Would we be, I mean, come on, the Obama administration came out, the first time it's ever really happened, it was the Obama administration that came out and said, hey, you know what, it's okay if we put a hit out on American citizens anywhere in the world. We can do that. You think they'd hesitate to put a hit out on somebody who wasn't an American citizen? And you know, not to get all tinfoil hatty or anything, but we're playing out of the Mossad playbook now. And that includes Murder Incorporated. It does. It just does. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Okie dokie. Hey, welcome. Hello?
Bob.
Yes. Jim.
Listen, I wanted to add one thing that I meant to mention earlier, if you don't mind.
Go right ahead.
Number one, pursuant to your last caller, why do you think the Soviets went into Afghanistan in the first place?
Working their way south.
Well, it wasn't because they need more territory. It's because they had, of course, discovered certain mineral and other natural resources that they wanted, as well as to have a staging platform for other activity.
Right, and you'll forgive me if I read the New York Times story, Jim, and the first thing that ran across my head was, you know, that somebody inside the administration was going, hey, somebody called Don Blankenship. This is right up his alley.
Well, maybe Mr. Blankenship should go over there and deal with the Afghans and the Taliban, and I think it'd be great for him. And the second thing I wanted to mention briefly, your references to the 14th Amendment.
Yes, sir.
That amendment gives the Constitution 50% of its power to protect American citizens. That's the reason it was passed. And here's a good example of it. If you have a tenured position, say in the public sector, under the 14th Amendment, after you go through your trial period, and with Federalists 3 years before you become career, okay?
Okay.
That job becomes your property. And you cannot be deprived of that job without due process. And one of the reasons that the 14th Amendment is under attack is because they want to eliminate the due process of that situation.
Right, because it's another assault on working people.
Exactly. Working people in the public sector. Now, I've got to say this. When Clinton Gore started their reinventing government thing, in the federal area, they wanted to decrease the amount of time it would take to remove for cause a federal employee from 30 days to like 2 weeks. And this was one of the bad things about that reinventing government thing. And I sent you an email about that.
Yes.
And I am so sorry that these people have to attack people who have gained tenure and have worked hard to gain that tenure and who have performed well, but yet have delegated hiring authority and firing authority to such a level that they can remove people with impunity. I mean, this is one of the reasons that the Office of Personnel Management in the federal government was destroyed and has become so attenuated that it basically only handles retirement, and that's just about it, and benefits. They don't have any authority as far as delegated examining authority for federal employees. And these people have taken a lesson from that, and they say, well, if they can do it, we can do it. If we can get rid of these federal employees, then we can just do what we want to with our employees. And there's no longer any respect for the worker or what he has tried to do to perform well in his job.
Right. And what was, you know, what was Sandra saying a few minutes ago, Jim, about back in the Hoover administration, them wanting to, quote-unquote, liquidate labor?
Well, that's what I'm trying to say. And this is part of it. And unfortunately, I think if they had their way, we're going to see a workforce that has no protection whatsoever, no guaranteed tenure, and that tenure has its roots right in the 14th Amendment. Life, you cannot deprive a person of life, liberty, or property. And the fact that your job becomes your property after you become a tenured employee.
I hadn't thought of it in that light, but that is very well taken, Jim. Very well taken indeed.
Well, let me tell you something. If there's one thing I know, it's federal personnel. And it basically sets the pace for any other, whether it's state civil service or any other type of civil service, county, whatever. It basically is transitioning authority from the law to whomever they wish they want to get rid of.
To arbitrary and capricious decision-making.
Precisely. 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 Exactly.
Well, thank you, Jim. I appreciate it.
Oh, by the way, what David was talking about was that business about the frog and things.
Yeah.
I just wonder where they're going to get the Internet and the things in Odorama.
Stop it. You're worse than David.
Well, if Bob Waters could do it, I'm
not. Take care, Jim.
This car.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Okay, well, I've been frivolous enough, but I wanted to bring those two points out about Afghanistan, and it is rich in mineral resources, and, you know, just exactly what the 14th Amendment does mean. I mean, it's 50% of the government's ability to protect its citizens, particularly in the workforce.
That is a very, very solid observation, Jim, and I do appreciate it.
Well, thank you, sir.
All right. Take care, Jim.
You too, buddy.
Bye now. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob. How are we?
Brother Albert.
Yes, sir. Well, well, well.
You've been far too gone far too long.
Yeah, vacation. You know how it is with the family and the kids.
And you come back more exhausted than when you left.
Well, yeah, because you can't go to sleep because, you know, you're worried if they're even going to have a world that isn't flammable, you know. Get a spark at the ignition switch there. It's unbelievable.
Right, or, you know, the faucets you can light.
And just to say what Sandra was talking about earlier, you know, how white people are getting put in jail. They're actually part of that. The other part of that story is black people have been being evicted from their homes and their homes being repossessed for small, petty type loans and things like that. So, you know, and the other thing to remember is, you know, I'll tell you what, you know, I'm not that much of a, I'm more of a defensively violent person, but I'll tell you, it's tough for me to drive past one of those goddamn check cash.
Payday lenders.
I just want to drive through those things. Those things, and you know what they're owned by? They're owned by the banks. They ain't mom and pop spots.
No.
Go around the country. They're all the same way. It's the no frills, green and yellow, or whatever, you know, type of anxiety causing, you know, home, you know, with yellow and then green.
With about a 6-year-old Cadillac out front. And a woman with big hair inside.
Just hit, and that's what, and they're charging what, 480% interest, stuff like that? It's ridiculous.
Yes.
It's ridiculous. I mean, honestly, seriously, come on, people. President not sure. You know, this guy, you know, I think he is sure. You know, and he's showing himself. I understand he does have a fine line to walk. You know, he does. He definitely does. I mean, he's
but it seems like every time he falls off the line, he falls off on the wrong side of it.
Yeah, he keeps, oh, catch me. Now he's done, oh, guys. He's just looking at them and ignoring us, smiling, la, 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 la. But, you know, there's a couple things I want to hear when he starts to address this issue. Number one, and you know this is a long, this is a, if we ever hear this, we can get in the streets but and have a good time. But, you know, this whole system needs to be completely redone. This system we have is a complete failure. We're headed into another lull. You watch. What are they trying to do now again? They're getting scared. So what do they want to do? They want to put out another bailout package because the other ones were big enough. And while I'll certainly agree to that point, the thing is this is a 19, you know, or 17.
And this 17, one ain't big enough either.
Yeah, I mean, come on. We still got wooden rims on this thing. We got wooden rims on this thing. For real. You know, so it's not that old that people used to use that kind of crap. But we haven't changed. You know, like, oh, we'll have a catalytic converter. Oh, the Mark V edition. Oh, and see how much, how clean it makes the exhaust. It's like pathological stupidity. It really is. I just, you know, you talk about this oil spill and they tell you, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, or we're going to try a hook shot, or we're going to try the layup, or, oh, we're going to do the belly crawl. What the hell are you doing? Now, honestly, this is all of us, right? Because this is all of us. I mean, you know, that's one thing that's nice to have them say, and I want him to say that. I want him to say that this thing in the Gulf is all of us, not just BP. And, you know, I'm getting tired of kicking these guys. They're too easy to, they're easy to kick when they don't do shit like this. You don't need any help. We don't need lubrication for them hookers. We don't. These guys are disgusting. Okay? And then I'll tell you another thing. You know, this is when Obama does this kind of stuff. He's treating us like a one-night stand. And I'll tell you, you know, if any movement has momentum and we got energy in the tank, it's us. It's not the Tea Partiers. Look at these people. Rand Paul and some other freak. And
yeah, Rand Paul, who was too lazy to pay his dues to be board certified and instead went the entrepreneurial route and invented his own board certification group.
Yeah, well, that's how these
And then certified himself.
Yeah, they want to be king. And they want their fiefdoms. And they want their own government. That's what libertarians are. They want to own people. They libertarians love that. Oh, boy, man, putting people in jail for that. Hey, I got a better plan. Let them out and let them work for me. And so they work their debt off. Like, they think they're slick or something. Like, they're new. It's like your six-year-old kid doing the same thing over and over again. Hey, are you still doing that? Maybe you need some books in your hands and you need to hold them out for a good hour or so. You know, I don't want to be, you know, such a fascist, but, I mean, come on, how many times are they going to try the same old, this is the same old crap. This is the same old crap over and over and over and over and over again. You know, president not sure, he better come out. We need another Manhattan Project. Now, it's sweet that, you know, I think you and I had discussed this a long time ago. And, you know, all of a sudden, I don't know if you've been paying attention. It's like when you get a certain type of car, next thing you know, you see it on the road all the time. I've been hearing it. I hear it. It's just beautiful things to hear the words Manhattan Project for energy just keep being put out.
You know, I was in D.C., and lo and behold, there was somebody talking about the, you know, the reinvigoration of the Apollo Project. And this isn't the Apollo Alliance, which isn't space. You know, this is about reimagining manufacturing and jobs and infrastructure in the country. You know, this wasn't crazy talk. This wasn't, you know... it wasn't about doing anything particularly extraordinary, except to begin doing what we're good, what we've always been good at doing, i.e., making stuff. But God forbid we make stuff, Albert, because if we start making stuff, the people who hold the bad checks that have been written over the course of the last 8 years might call the debt. It's frustrating.
We still got to move even. We have to move past these systems. I mean, this stuff is. I hate to sound like the raving guy in the pen standing on the street, you know, some soapbox on a street corner somewhere. This system's dead. It's over. It's over. There's no reason. There's no future here. This is not a future. This is not a future you're going to want to hand. We're going to hand down more. And as Rand Paul says, I mean, who's going to miss a few hills?
I take it you saw those this weekend.
Saw them. It made me almost. I don't mean. It's unbelievable. It makes me. It flips me out. It flips me completely out.
I was so proud when I saw that Dave Nywert had put that up over at Crooks and Liars. I was fit to break out bawling, because when a site that gets as much traffic as Crooks and Liars does takes note of this, then you know it's going to significantly enter the consciousness.
Yes, sir, very soon. And it's got to happen fast. It has to happen. I mean, we got we for the Manhattan Project, we penciled it for 5 and got it done in 4, right?
Right.
We can do that again. We need a Manhattan Project. We need, and the sweet thing is now we have so many people graduate, so many smart minds. We have way more smart
minds. We have smart minds that aren't doing anything right now.
Exactly. They're writing on blogs because they're not challenged. They're surfing.
Because they're not being paid.
Well, they're not being paid, but they're not, you know, and they're like, well, screw it. You know, I could do my, you know, my physics thesis, you know, on my own. I'll do my own work, you know, and they're just doing their own thing. But it would be nice to bring all these minds together now, start kind of, you know, putting them up, and every time someone like Bill O'Reilly or Glenn Beck gets their little tizzies and a hissy because somebody who makes sense is in power or has some authority and power now, like what they did with Van Jones and everybody else who's, you know, trying to do the good thing, you know, you just slap them in the mouth. Like just slap them. I want to see, you know, he talks, oh, I want to kick ass. No, you know, and this is the other thing. He didn't say, like, I want to kick ass like I do. Like you do, like someone who's been in a fight.
No, no, no. He said he has experts who will tell him whose ass to kick. But yeah, semantically like speaking, this. Albert, semantically speaking, he did not do the follow-up and say, and then I will go and kick it.
Oh, he didn't do that either. But he also didn't even say it like he meant it. You know, like he said it like a politician. So I know whose ass to kick. Like, who says that? Nobody says that. If I'm going to kick your ass, I'm going to say it like kicking ass. There's no separation there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Kick ass. It's like, who's this guy? You get out of the ring. I mean, it's like, you should
and
know.
And then it wasn't 24 hours before crazy-ass Jim Inhofe came out and said, well, you know, I don't think he sounded very presidential.
Yeah, well.
You know, this from a guy who supported a president who gave a back rub to the German chancellor.
Yeah, he molested her.
I mean, no, there's absolutely no shame on the other side. None.
There isn't.
And that's what makes a man like Barack Obama hesitant when he says what he says, because he's anticipating the counterpunch, because he knows they have the machine to create one.
No, see, that's stupid. He needs to worry about.
Well, yeah, but I'll go so far though as to say it is typical of the behavior of someone who has been abused. You well, flinch, you flinch, you flinch before the punch is thrown. You flinch.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I'm not giving him that. No, because this isn't a game. This isn't a schoolyard. You know, like this is the species. Like, you know, he doesn't have to worry about Republicans. They can't even handle themselves. They can't even create their own grass movements. These people are in a complete and utter total disarray. All right? They got words. That's it. That's all they got. They don't have anything else underneath their feet. And they haven't for a long time now. Okay? George W. Bush has energized us to such and he's just patronizing us. With nonsensical words.
And that's what I'm afraid we're going to get more of tomorrow. And I'm sorry to say that I've lost, you know, I mean, I was asked earlier, you know, is there anything you want him to say? Look, it's going to be another great speech. He gives great speeches. That's what he does. Good speeches.
Well, no, he really, honestly.
You know, George Bush couldn't read a speech. Without mangling some or all of it. But then he turned around, and there were ruthless corporatists behind him who executed on what had just been said.
Mm-hmm. Immediately.
Immediately. And devil may care who was standing in front of the effort. And that really is the difference. That really is the difference, I think. Albert, I got to you too late in a phone call too long and coming. Don't be such a stranger, all right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'll be back.
All right. You do that. We'll talk to you soon, Albert.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye now. I was just thinking about him the other day, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin, our buddy Albert. And we are fresh out of time. Before I go, I want to share this with you because it's smack dab in the middle of Moran Monday. And it's a great email from our buddy Corey in Louisville, who signs off Corey in Louisville, proponent of Jack Conway for Kentucky Senate and a 12-team stable athletic conference. So you know what's coming. Subject line, guess who has now joined the ranks of Joe, not Joe the plumber, not a plumber? That would be Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. See, he calls himself board certified. The problem is the board that certified him was founded by, drumroll please, Rand Paul. The last real medical board that certified him did not recertify him, not because he wasn't qualified, but because Rand Paul let it lapse, wouldn't pay the bill. It costs something along the lines of $150 a year for a 10-year certification. This guy couldn't lay out $1,500 for a certification recognized by most reputable doctors. $1,500 he would have most likely recovered by his lunch break the day he would have paid it. Rand Paul is so libertarian Flavor-Aid drunk, which, God, I love that phrase. Not Kool-Aid. This is the cheap stuff. The Flavor-Aid. So libertarian Flavor-Aid drunk that by logical extension, if you think that one medical board is too stringent or expensive, doctors can form their own boards, certify themselves, and call themselves board certified. So if there isn't really much accountability, should something frighteningly go wrong, because as he said, sometimes accidents happen, just tell the miners who died in Western Kentucky and West Virginia or the rig workers in the Gulf who've died, just tell them that. Now he and his campaign are whining that the local media is focused on a trivial matter like the board certification qualifications of the board that certified him. And, you know, they do have a point.
What medical board that certified Rand Paul libertarian ophthalmologist doesn't matter in a Senate race for federal office? But what it does do is bring into sharp relief what other things the Rand Paul campaign may not be forthcoming about. It's no surprise that this story came out at the same time Paul announced he would be a fierce advocate for people's Second Amendment rights. You're right. People are askeert that the foreign Muslim socialist communist fascist liberal in the White House is a-going to steal your submachine guns and sawed-off shotguns and modified automatics and assault rifles and handguns and BB guns and paintball guns and water guns and Peter gun and bulked-up biceps, a.k.a. guns. Never mind that Obama has made it easier to open carry in the federal parks. The funny thing is the board certification story came out last. In any case, the Paul campaign is run by a bunch of morons. They don't see the problem in addressing small stuff like that. His campaign's going to die the death of a thousand cuts, and they will be cuts of their own making. However, they are not as big of a moron as the ones who occupy the offices of the Big East Conference in Providence, Rhode Island. They do not see the problem of not bringing in 4 to 5, depending on sources, new football teams to the conference, but to do that, telling the non-D1A football-playing schools to take a hike. The Big East, as constructed, consists of 8 football schools, 7 non-D1A football-playing schools, and the blood-sucking, do-nothing parasitic leech known as Notre Dame. The football Big East teams, plus Kansas, K-State, Iowa State, Missouri, and possibly Baylor, is a BCS-worthy football conference, a darn good basketball conference, and most importantly, a stable football conference. Once again, Notre Dame, the Roman Catholic Church, is screwing it up for the rest of us. The final Moran Monday nomination of the evening. That's the program for tonight. I think we've gotten the new week off to a roaring good start with Moran Monday. Join us tomorrow evening. I'll be here. Hope you'll be here. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen, from Lottie in the chat room to Gene and Susan, our news ninjas, to our blogger, Texas Betsy, John Fox, our engineer, web designer, webmaster, show host, jack of all trades, and Peter Godbold, our IT professional, and Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Nothing happens here that doesn't pass through Ben's servers. And I can't tell you the hard work he's put in since 2002. Thanks go out to Osborne Inc., Matt Osborne, Osborne Inc., OSBORNEINK.com, our Southeast correspondent, and to my head writer, David, in Tennessee. Of course, nothing can happen here without the continued support both of you, thank you, and of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. They're a big part of why this program continues and this network. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Cussing and discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net.
And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome aboard. The week begins anew. My favorite day of the week as we look out on a brand new, fresh, five-day set of broadcasting. A minute and a half past the hour as we begin this first day of the broadcast week, which should be as close to normal as anything ever gets around here. In other words, five solid days of broadcasting, no interruptions, no travel, no trips, none of that. No, it's my favorite day of the week because it means we start a new week of broadcasting. It's my favorite day of the week because, well, we set aside Mondays for some very, shall we say, special people. That's right. It's Moran Monday on the horn. Crank up the calliope. Get out the popcorn. And get ready for some right-wing morons. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. You will not believe your eyes. You will not believe your ears. You will not believe that such manifest moranity is possible in the 21st century, but it is. Hurry, hurry, hurry. No one admitted after the first 5 minutes. Step behind the curtain and see the right-wing freaks. It is Moran Monday on the horn. Yes, it most assuredly is, and we got a bunch of them. We got all kinds of nominees. We got them mean. We got them stupid. We've got right-wing morons of every stripe and every type. And, well, you know, let's not just sit around here. Let's get busy. Let's see. Let's start with think tank right-wing morons. You know, they're very proud of what a gang of intellectuals they are over to the Cato Institute. You know who Cato was. I assume they named this after Cato. Cato the Younger was the guy who opposed Julius Caesar's attempts to democratize and engage in some populist reforms in ancient Rome. Cato took up arms against Caesar, was part of the civil war that Caesar had to put down. Cato was proud of the fact that he drank only bad wine, you know, that kind of thing. And then there was Cato the Elder. Cato the Elder lived during the time, if I recall correctly, of the Punic Wars. And the only thing Cato the Elder ever did was sit around babbling the phrase, Carthago delenda est. Yes. He was kind of like the way George Bush babbled on and on about we've got to take out Saddam because we don't want the smoking gun to be a mushroom cloud. Actually, it was kind of sleazy rice. Goes great with kind of sleazy chicken. Who said that? But, you know, just on and on and on. Cato the Elder. Hi, Cato the Elder. How you doing today? Carthago delenda est. My, that's a lovely, freshly pressed new toga you're wearing today, Cato the Elder. Carthago delenda est. And as my old Latin professor once said, it got to where people just wouldn't invite him to social events anymore because the cocktail party conversation was nothing. Everybody else is lying around on the couches, being fed grapes by the slaves and so forth. And my, this is some lovely rotten fish sauce. They love that stuff. It was called garum, by the way, G-A-R-U-M. And while everybody, oh yes, it is. It's magnificent rotten fish sauce.
What's Cato the Elder saying?
Cartago Delinda est.
Carthage must be destroyed. Carthage must be destroyed. Carthage must be destroyed. Well, so I presume...